call to order the January 22nd, 2014 special board meeting. And Mrs. Stecker, will you take roll?
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood? Mr. Alger?
Here.
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis? Mrs. Black?
Board member John Kenwood is not able to attend the meeting in person due to employment-related obligations. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Kenwood notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but he would like to participate in the meeting by phone. Can I have a motion to approve Mr. Kenwood's participation by phone in tonight's board meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, you want to take a roll?
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Pachinski?
Yes.
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 Okay. And I think Mr. Kenwood's going to be at around 8 o'clock. Around 8 o'clock, we'll try it. Okay. The next part is public participation, and I'll open it up. There's a paragraph we usually read. Everybody in here is aware of the paragraph, so I'm not going to read it tonight. So if there's any public participation... Do you have a form? No, I'm not going to worry. We're fine.
I think she's ready. You ready for it?
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just waiting for my name to be called.
All right, so.
Stephanie Clark, Lincoln Benford.
You're not going to stand up in the middle here?
No. Okay. Please don't make me.
What, a podium?
First, I just want to say that I think adding on to the schools is a great idea. I like the plans that have been proposed. However, I'm concerned about a clear plan and focus. After hearing the latest facilities plan and the recommendations from Team 21 and CICT for all-day kindergarten, I'm left wondering what our priorities are at D41. Without a referendum, our long-term facilities plan doesn't even eliminate all supportables or provide for all-day kindergarten. To start with, I don't know if all-day kindergarten should or should not happen. I do know that it seems that it is a reality across most of the country, and if we are trying to be cutting edge in 21st century, shouldn't it be a priority at D41? The decision of all-day kindergarten should not be a decision that is in the hands of the taxpayers or the parents passing a referendum. I think it should be in the hands of the administration as the direction that our district needs to go. As far as the facilities plan, phase one seems inconsistent across the schools. Has anyone taken notice that the plan leaves portables at Lincoln to eventually be used as STEAM labs, not everyday classrooms? Why are we leaving portables at this school for labs, and Churchill and Forest Glen will not have the labs? Why don't we leave portables at those schools as well, so they can have labs? As of right now, Ben Franklin is the only school that has a space dedicated to a lab. So are STEAM and innovation labs a nice to have or an educational necessity? If it's a necessity, are you putting the kids at Churchill and Forest Glen, who won't get these labs unless a referendum passes, at a disadvantage? If labs aren't a necessity, would that space at Lincoln and Franklin be better utilized as classroom space so that all-day kindergarten could be a reality sooner than later? In addition to that, you could do phase one additions and leave some portables at all the schools to make space for all-day kindergarten without a referendum. Have you considered combining phase one and phase two into one plan to try to pass a referendum using $7 to $8 million as a down payment to the taxpayer? And the current bonds will be paid off in a couple of years, so a new referendum could replace those existing bonds at a possibly lower level, since you might not need as much money. If for some reason that referendum doesn't pass, you could have phase one alone be your plan. Either way, the additions to the schools can happen. Maybe it just has to be delayed here. Why wouldn't you at least try? Feedback seems to be positive at the elementary school for the plan you've presented so far. So you've crossed that hurdle already. It seems to me that the past referendum failed because even the parents of D41 students didn't support it before it went to vote. The reality is once most of the portables are eliminated, I think it will be about impossible to pass a referendum. Using all-day kindergarten as a carrot to entice the community to vote yes isn't going to be a big enough selling point for enough people. If you're serious about the plan, wouldn't you at least give it a try to have the best possible chance for success? I'd also like to mention, I'm not sure we've vetted all the questions. For example, at the Lincoln PTA meeting this morning, a parent asked why we weren't putting a kitchen in at Lincoln so we didn't have to farm out hot lunch any longer. I guess my point in all of this is, what are we really trying to accomplish? This plan isn't consistent across the schools, and it does not appear to be addressing the recommendation for the best educationally sound decision we could be making as a school district right now. If all day kindergarten would be more of a benefit to our students than getting them affordable, should that take priority? A referendum is a big gamble and years away, and I'm not sure what the motivation is to move quickly. I realize that the portables have been an issue for a decade. However, the recommended solutions and priorities have changed numerous times since April, so how solid is our vision? We have a surplus in the budget to spend. I ask to spend it wisely. Thank you
for your comments. Are you going to provide those to us in written form, too?
I can, if you want.
I would. Yeah, that would be nice. As long as you have them there. And Drew and Sam came to the meeting before something.
7:36, here we are.
Here we are.
Sorry for being late. Had some child issues, but here I am. Sorry. Okay, so I gather we're in the middle of public participation. So are we?
Who is the one and only?
Okay. Anybody else?
Okay. Should I take over again?
Yes, please.
Okay.
The gavel bit has been added.
All right, so now we're into discussion items.
Yep.
With facilities planning phase two and the communication community engagement pieces.
Correct. We're going to start off with a conversation, a very brief conversation on the survey that I'll hand over to Julie to give you an update on where we're at with the survey.
Well, we consulted with School Perceptions about gathering data on teacher specialization and multi-age initiatives, which we had been going down the direction of focus groups and pullbacks in that. So we talked with them to see how they could help us, and School Perceptions recommended a survey that would be a combination of some targeted questions around those 21st century initiatives, some continuation of some of our satisfaction questions that we've used in the past, and some of what they call the master questions, which help to provide a context in comparison with other similar districts. It's a very much a scaled-back version of the community survey proposal that they put forward, but including some targeted questions around the 21st century initiatives. The cost is much less than the community survey, so it would be between $6,000 and $8,000 maximum. So it's below the level that requires board action. What we were hoping to get is direction from the board. We've tentatively set up some time on Friday to start working on developing content for the survey. And then Paul would follow up with the discussion at the regular meeting during the superintendent's update on the 27th.
Any questions for Julie at this point?
Well, I think it's critical that we roll out a survey. I mean, we talked about this survey in 2021, and I know we've talked about this as a board. I think it's unfortunate that we can't roll out the plan that we had in place, but I respect the fact that it's the decision to pull back and the reasons why. I get that. I think it's going to be important to include, as you said, the 21st century initiatives rollout piece, and especially the Best Dad through Team 21, because Team 21 spent so much time last summer really working on some of the evaluation and the toolkits on that. I agree. I think the sooner we can do this, the better, and certainly start to gather some data, notwithstanding a separate, more detailed certainly rollout survey, 21st century rollout survey, but then also community survey. And I'm interested, I mean, one of the notes I made to myself in coming in tonight was we talk a lot about how do we push out communication, what are the tools. You sent us a great packet of information, Julie, that I know we're going to go through tonight. But one question that, has been on my mind for a couple years at least is what responsibility the community has to pull information from us, to sign up for e-news, to come to meetings, to avail themselves of data. We had a huge rush of interest when the whole Wheaton College property issue was on the table. And actually got some phone calls after that from community members saying, I didn't realize we had such an issue with facilities and should pay better attention, et cetera. So, I would like to see some framing of questions on, you know, what percentage of time do you pull data? Do you listen to board meetings? Do you, you know, identify the need for involvement, you know, on your end, too?
The survey that we're talking about for this particular piece doesn't preclude doing a larger community survey that we would do. And so when you talk about those types of questions, are you talking about that for the larger
survey? Yeah, definitely. But I just want to get it on the record that I think that's good for us to be thinking about and, you know, how to vet that.
So, break it down for me. It's we're doing a smaller survey surrounding the Team 21 initiatives and the progress. The Team 21 initiatives. The survey will also encompass our success or our milestones that we've made over the prior school year with the changes that we've made. Is it going to include that?
The school perceptions strongly recommend it to us that we do some general questions around broader satisfaction issues. How do you feel about academics in general?
Oh, okay. Not just to limit ourselves in multi-age teacher specialization.
Okay.
They just said, you know, when you do that, it becomes so narrow. It's really hard to pull out all the information you need to. So they really did recommend making it a little broader. Ensure that you are talking about those areas and that the questions are very defined. But it's a little bit broader, but not the entire community. So
right.
I think that the big difference is this would go to parents, staff, and some students. One of the pieces that they did say, again, their recommendation, the experts, it really should be fourth grade up. That should take those types of surveys just because it
is. And it's the same survey for the students, the parents, and the staff.
Those are the pieces that we would be working on. There would probably be some branching questions different for staff than they would be maybe for the parents. Mm-hmm. And the language would be different for the students. But you would see very similar pieces. But that's why we have. We want to go with this company. They're good. They've been around. They've done this multiple times.
So it's the school community. It's a broad survey about the school perceptions and how we're doing
mm-hmm.
it. But it also encompasses some subsets of the initiatives that we did earlier. And I guess my probably don't have timelines yet, right? When we're thinking about
that's what we're thinking. I'm hopeful Friday we'll be able to give the timelines because of us having to make a slight adjustment last week.
And I know
Lindsay, but with this, you don't have to, because of the price, you don't have to come back to the board.
We would update the board.
We update the board at our next meeting.
Yes.
But you could, that would give you
the ability to move forward.
You could expedite
without the three-step process.
Yeah.
But what we're really seeking here, are we in the right direction?
Right.
I don't want to be going over here, even though it's under the $10,000, the board's not in agreement with the direction we're heading. So
I think it's a good idea. And I guess my last question is I know it's going to probably be comparing apples to oranges or, you know, Fuji to Michigan or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but see if we can marry or somehow baseline or milestone the surveys that we did previously to the survey that we're sending out now.
And they recommended that.
Yeah, okay.
So some of the questions would be taken from surveys we've done in the past. And
okay.
they were designed to have some questions that could easily be used in that way.
Okay.
And then some would be their master questions so they could say, you know, you are right in line with districts in this area, but you're very divergent here, and, you know, why is that? And then there would be the third section that's focused on our 21st century initiatives and is consistent with our desire to evaluate those things.
Did they give us what they think is a success response rate?
You know, I didn't ask them that, but that's certainly information that they
have. I mean, if that's something that we can peg to, if in other school districts,
mm-hmm.
we get 6% response rate.
Oh, the response rate.
Yeah, that. And so if 6% comes in, we go, hey, you know what?
That's pretty good. That's
pretty
a national norm.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we ask that question.
I know you guys are still
come to you and figuring out the whole specifics of this, but do you guys have a pic so I can get a picture of this survey? I mean, is this, how many questions are we talking about? Are we at 20 questions?
That's really where the experts need to talk to us about, on each area. I know there's a science behind it. How many questions, the types of questions, how many times do you ask it, but in multiple ways, all of those pieces. And again, why we're not survey experts, and why we want to reach out to people who do this on a daily basis.
And then how are we reaching out to the parents and the staff? I'm guessing that's pretty easy.
Right,
to
the staff and students, they're captive
audience. Yeah, they're captive. You get a good percentage of them. Mm-hmm. Parents, what do they recommend, or are you still talking through that?
We believe a majority can be online, the email, but we'll also have some other communication so people are aware of it. We want the highest participation rate possible. So we want our community, our parent, staff, and student community to participate in this in the highest numbers.
I don't know how they're going to do it, or in kind of to leverage what Joe is saying. Maybe if we have the opportunity to talk to the PTA presidents and say, and I don't know what their turnaround time is, we want to get this out in the next 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. You go to the PTA parents and or presidents and you say, pull your members, pull your boards, give us 2 to 3 questions that you'd like to be on the survey. Mm-hmm. You know, and then say, hey, you know, these are similar, let's knock these out, or yes or no. Just an idea.
And what might be important to that local unit, that particular school.
And so what you're suggesting is get some community input to what should be the survey as quickly as you can.
As quickly as I can, as efficiently as I can, without letting this thing drip.
And I think that's the biggest concern. When he was talking about the larger survey, he was in that 5 to 8 weeks of development, because it's back and forth, and we're like, that's not going to fly. And again, why we're going to be a little tighter, more targeted type of survey makes a lot of sense. And it's going to the heart of a number of the issues that we need to be asking about.
And we will make this available in Spanish also.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So first I'd like to thank you for bringing it up, because you didn't need to bring it up, it looks like, because it's under the 10,000, but it's good, and obviously we all recognize this is really important. Two things that I would like to reiterate is, if I'd like to, when we do the survey, I'd like to have some sort of plan to really try to boost enrollment. For the survey, boost participation, because I think that this topic last year, you know, was a very.
So that's the number we need to call them to.
There's a lot of interest in the topic. I would hope that we would try to drive to make sure we get an equal amount of interest in the survey. So that's one thing. There should be some sort of plan, I would think, that says how do we drive participation in the survey. The second thing is there any kind of, when we do it, and maybe for $6,000 you don't get this, but is there any kind of security or anything else that goes out in the survey to make sure that people self-identify properly and only get to take the survey once?
Every respondent will have an access code, so they can only take it one time.
Okay.
If people misidentify their information, you know, there's not a lot.
But if the access code should tell us whether it's a teacher, a student, part of the admin, can we do that or no?
Well, that's a good question. I would assume they would say this range is going to your students, but we don't see those. That's part of the reason for having school perception students, is they do that, they keep it confidential, it's nothing that we, because that's what I think people worry about, that somehow we're going to know who said what.
Well, I think if we're,
we wouldn't be able to see that.
There'll be interest, I'm thinking, in the results of this, to know, what did the parents think? What did the teachers think? So I would like the survey company to make sure that they can guarantee that if this is a parent number, it's a parent number. They don't have to tell us who it is.
Right.
Yeah.
These are teachers. We should be able to have very clean blocks.
Yeah.
Because that'll give us better information from the survey to know, okay, here the parents think this, the teachers think this. It'll give us better data. So
the parent, I can't identify myself as a teacher.
Right.
Okay.
To take away the self-identifying and assignments.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they don't have to tell us who they are. They just know that this went to a teacher.
But there are some teachers who are parents.
Well, then we have to decide, and that's what the survey should do. They should be taking two surveys. One as a teacher and one as a parent.
Yeah, that gets into the perfection over progress kind of thing. You know, if there's one or two of them, do we change the whole schematic of the program to do the one or two?
And that's something we can bring up to them, because I'm sure they've dealt with these type of issues before, so we'll bring that up to them on Friday.
We can only do so much.
Yeah.
$1,000,
yeah. So John's ready. If you're feeling comfortable with the direction we're heading, again, I'll bring it up during my superintendent comments on Monday. But if the board's comfortable with the direction, am I hearing anything otherwise?
I just had one more comment. When we were given this original information, School Perceptions had in their packet their recent clients, I guess you would call them. And I did go on Mount Prospect 57. There were three schools that were K through 8, pre-K through 8. The other were high schools or unit districts. And Mount Prospect did have their 2013 survey results up. So it was interesting to see how School Perceptions presents the data. It was very well done. It was presented as if you would assume it would be. And there's done in bar charts and pie charts and then just some verbatims. But I did contact their director of communication because her name was on there, and she spoke really highly of some of what you guys are talking about, which is the right sample size. You know, they work really closely with you to fine-tune the questions, so only good comments about it from her. So it was, it made me feel better in terms of the group we're using, because we got to get back to separating out data collection. It just is a cleaner, more scientific, and, you know, it's normed, so just a better tool.
Yeah, we agree. So if I'm not hearing anything different than the direction we're heading.
I just had a real quick question.
Okay.
Julie, could you tell me what was the details, what were the details of the last survey, when it was done?
The last survey we did in-house or the last survey we had done
professionally? Well, I guess I'd ask you both ways.
Okay. Well, in 2007, that was the last time we had a survey done professionally. And that was done in advance of referendum and that kind of thing. And it was a combination of satisfaction and some questions around referendum-related or facility-related things. In 2010, 11, and 12, we did our in-house survey. So that was parents, students, staff, community members, and that was we had a committee that came together and we developed a satisfaction survey. So and that was reported to the board, you know, the results of that were reported to the board every year.
So the 10, 11, 12.
13, we didn't do it because we were rolling out, as were all schools in Illinois, the Illinois 5 Essentials. And we just felt like it was required to be done in March, and which was typically our window when we did the satisfaction survey. So we just felt like it was going to be too much. This year is supposed to be optional, 5 Essentials, which is March. But so that's sort of a history in a nutshell of our survey.
And you'll be able to use, this outfit will be able to use both the 07 numbers and the 10, 11, 12 numbers.
Well, they were going to use some questions. Now, I don't know if they will recommend using questions from the 07 because that was a one-off. We didn't repeat it.
But they
do recommend using some questions from our in-house survey to maintain some of that trend line.
So with the 10, 11, 12 and the new one, you can continue based.
You'll have some continuous data and some different data.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to pause the conversation. John wants to, he's available, and he wants to make sure he's a survey piece as well. And
7:56, John Kenwood has joined the meeting. All right, John, go ahead unless you want to. Can you hear us, John?
Yeah, I can hear you. Just tell me what page you are in the presentation that you sent. I've read it, so just tell me what page you're on.
That presentation is going to happen a little bit later. All we wanted to do to start the meeting was to discuss the survey that I sent in the board update on Friday, that it's going to be more of a targeted survey going to parents, staff, and students, as opposed to the larger overarching satisfaction survey that would also go to the community at large. This survey would target the multi-age teacher specialization amongst some other topics as well. But the biggest difference is the recipients of the survey being, again, parents, staff, and students.
Okay.
And it will be less than the $10,000. So I was looking for board direction. The board has said to continue moving forward in this, and then I'll bring an update in my superintendent report on Monday evening. So that's what we were talking about.
Okay.
Any comments on that piece? Or are you okay with us moving forward?
Well, my comment was, when we started doing these surveys, and I think I said it last time, I don't think we did it last year, but the idea was to develop a baseline and see how we're doing against that baseline. So if we're having a company do the survey, it'd be nice for them to look at our previous survey and see if they can continue along with a baseline or not, or how much their survey would change based on what we surveyed previously.
Yeah, we took your comments.
That it is a baseline.
Yeah, we took, I apologize, we took your comments, brought them to school perception, and they can incorporate some of those questions so we have a baseline to see how we're doing compared to those same type of questions that we asked in years past. So that is something they can do, and they actually support that. They believe that's a very good way of continuing to move this forward.
Okay.
All right. So if there are no other comments with that piece, I think Julie and I know where we're moving forward with the survey. The main the first part of tonight is really around the phase two. One of the pieces, be a little ahead of myself, I thought we did a really nice job at our last workshop when we kind of focused on the seven norms of collaboration. At times, because of our enthusiasm, we jump on top of each other, and I'm one of the worst at doing it. On the back, it gives you a little description of what they are. But if we could keep those at the forefront so we can listen to each other's comments and perceptions, and we will try to capture that. Karen and Lori are going to capture our comments, do a little bit of facilitation of asking the probing questions to make sure we have clarity, so we are able to capture everything up on the board as opposed to the chart paper that we had last time. This is a little cleaner and easier way of doing it. So the first piece, one of the pieces that I want to mention in your packet is a document we actually used quite a while ago. It says, long-range facility plan, and the second header is phase one. The third header is phase two. That really speaks about what have we been doing, what does phase one look like, what is phase two. And with tonight's focus around phase two, it really felt like it was important to go back, take a moment to reflect on what the administration, and I think that's really important, administration has recommended going forward, that this is an idea that needs, as we've said at three of the four elementary schools, that this idea needs continuous vetting. It's early in its thinking.
Is this something you sent out? Or?
This one, he doesn't. We're going to scan it to you. We're going to send it to you right now. I apologize, John. This is one that we just printed for everybody. We'll send it to you right now. I apologize. But there's nothing new in this piece. It was created in sometime in late October, talking about what is that elementary, what does it mean to Lincoln, because that's an aspect of phase two, and how does it impact Hadley. So that's where the staff's recommendation came from. But probably more important than that are some of the values that we used to really create this phase two. And John, those pieces, we'll send you these as well, but I'll read them off. From the staff perception, what we heard from the community, what we heard from board, were, you know, eventually eliminating all portables. Again, staff values, offering full-day kindergarten. Full-day kindergarten would assist in closing the achievement gap for some students. And then neighboring districts are starting to provide this in greater number. Mm-hmm. Another value, again, staff value, expanding the preschool program. Very similar in nature to the underlying reasons under kindergarten. Right-sizing all schools, as we've talked about, from the facilities, ensuring that we have the right amount of students within our schools. But one of the pieces that parents brought up in three of our, or two of the three meetings that we've had, is the congestion outside of the buildings when dropping off their students with cars and traffic and everything else. And right-sizing helps that as well. And one of the other values we used in deciding, in talking about phase two, was the location. You know, we put in there the avoid land acquisition costs. Spalding's ours. So those were some of the values that we brought forward. But these were our values, our assumed values of what the board and the community. But now I think it's really important to hear, do these align with your values? And again, we're going to have to find out, do these also align once the board puts their values down? Do these align with the community's values as well? So that will go into our second phase around communication, community engagement. Joe?
Do you have these listed, but they're listed in any particular order?
No, I avoided that. Okay. I was going to put them down in some order, but then I was like, you know what, no. Let's put them up there because there are values, and they really need to be. This is staff's recommendation to you, and this now would be an opportunity for you guys to talk about. You can start with that the staff column and say, yeah, that's a value that we want to bring forward, but you also may bring forward a value that is not on that page. And then Karen and Lori will kind of take it from here, you know, listening to your comments and then capturing those pieces for us.
Are you asking us to rate?
No, I don't want you rating them. I want you saying, are these the values that you want? Are these the values for that phase two? Because we really
Are these values, I don't see the values in the document that was
made. It's coming to you. Okay. Maureen's firing off things to your left and right now.
So I heard five values: eliminate portables, all-day kindergarten, expand the preschool program, right-size all schools, including the congestion outside the buildings, and then sound like there was one that said the staff wants to avoid land acquisition costs.
Correct. So you have those. So I would then now look to the board to say, do these align with your values, or are there others that you want to ensure that are captured here?
To start it off, I would say that I agree with I agree with the first four. Eliminating the portables, offering full-day kindergarten, expand preschool program, and right-size all schools. I'm concerned about the land acquisition costs, but I don't think we should be constrained about that. I think that's a constraint that, because we own it, doesn't mean that's the only choice mm-hmm. we have. There are other choices we can make. I think that there's another one on here, not on here, that I'd like on here, and it's almost like the right size of all schools. But to right size, we talk always about the number of students and congestion and all. There's also the concept of right sizing the spaces inside the school. So it isn't just about getting the right number of students in there, but are the spaces conducive to where we're trying to go with the curriculum? You know, it isn't just get the number of students down. If you've got a bunch of small rooms and they don't work well for PBLs and in labs and things, it's still constraining. So I think that there's maybe call it modernization, alignment or something like that along there.
Perfect.
So modernize.
Well, we always talk about 21st century learning, so...
I tried not to say that. I felt like we should have had a little bingo card, but every time you did that, you had to put a quarter in or something.
I know, but this is the staff, right? So,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, 21st century space, you know, right-sizing as well, not just the number of kids, but...
Karen, yes.
Okay.
That, but then the last one is a modernization or like we just said, you know, 21st century capabilities.
Of existing spaces?
Yeah. So then when we're done with this, it isn't just a matter of getting the schools to a certain number, but to make sure that those spaces are something good that are going to last for a while.
One thing that's important to realize, too, from the facility standpoint, and Bob stressed this, I know, of course, when the presentation was given, you're not allowed to do that when you jam 600 kids into a school the size that only can handle 450. And by expanding, by going this in phase level two, it does, and this goes back first phase versus second phase, it certainly happens when you have a fifth school, but you can do it even before that with the portables. You can start moving in these schools and making these changes that Dean just described. And what we have to do, what I believe as a board, is we have to give flexibility to future boards.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't want to do things in steps, and you know, we've heard that today, but you can't limit yourself. And with facilities and real estate, you will limit yourself by waiting to do one big thing. That's one thing when I look at the STEP program we're doing here, it gives flexibility later on. And I think that's a key thing to that point.
So I would think we heard you say by lessening the crowding at current locations, it opens up the spaces for what Dean was referring to, which is converting traditional or existing space into more 21st century learning spaces.
That is correct.
That's correct.
Didn't we also speak at a couple of our finance meetings discussions the idea, and I think we talked about it more of an expense savings, but bringing the students that we are busing to other for programs to other schools to make that part of to make that a discussion/decision point that
yes.
All of the students that we're busing to other schools because we don't have the facilities that we look at
where we can.
We didn't think we could eliminate it always because sometimes it's going to be capability, but to bring it down as much as we could.
I appreciate that.
Dollar amount is like $7 million of tuition costs.
It's a large amount of tuition costs there.
And then just to put that in perspective, though, we have a $50 million budget. Our human resource benefits, all that, salaries, is $36 million. So you have $14 million left over. And we pay $7 million of that $14. So half of it, goes to tuition. And that's the magnitude we're talking. Now, we're not going to, with the new school and the additional 16 classrooms, bring all that $7 million back in. We know that. But that magnitude of that budget is important for people to realize. That's what I see. And to that point, too, one of the other benefits from bringing, we have neighborhood schools. The minute you ship a kid outside your school, she's no longer part of a neighborhood school. And that's what we, you know, you read philosophies and mission, all that, neighborhood schools are important. Yet, we're not taking care of all our students. This will allow us to at least bring some of them back to that neighborhood school. And I think that is a byproduct of this phase two, phase one, phase two combination.
Well, I appreciate you guys having that on there because I can't believe I forgot having that on one of our values.
You're capturing our meeting notes, but I want to make sure I don't know how these are going to be.
And more also capturing notes.
So that bullet point of reduced cost of busing students to other locations, that is actually true. But my thought is that concept, and I apologize, there's so many acronyms mm-hmm. that are used in the board. I don't know what that student population is called.
For our students receiving specialized instruction,
getting
often that is special education.
Special education.
Yeah, we do, because of our limited space, we have to have 20 of our students receiving their education in one of the six cooperating case districts.
CASE
is the program that oversees the special education for the cooperative.
And I know we're reiterating things we discussed in the Finance Committee, but
that's okay.
One of the things that was said was that, and I think it's Mr. Nelson who runs CASE, we are overwhelming them at some level, too. And by increasing our space, we may actually become a resource for them to bring students from outside mm-hmm. our district, and then they would pay tuition to us.
We are one of the districts that we struggle more with our space than our other cooperating districts.
We're a bigger user than others.
Bigger user of other...
Because of facilities.
Because of facilities. It's not the lack of...
Desire.
Teachers or desire, it literally is the lack of space to be able to offer these programs.
And I think that's important to note, that that's what the feedback that we receive, and that's the facts. So,
I guess, Paul, I think the last time we talked about this, I'm sort of remembering a number like 240.
We have, we have 400... Karen, help me. We have over 400 special education students total.
Right. I thought we felt that 60% of them could come back, or 200.
We really feel like the kids that are going to other districts, we feel like a safe number would be around 60% that we could return home out of the students that go to different districts. We feel like. Because some of those students, remember, have some very significant needs that
That's about 200. That is about 240, then, correct?
No, we don't have 60% of our special ed kids outplayed.
No.
It was more like 20.
We have about 20 some odd students who are going to another school district, and we believe 60% of those would be able to come back to our district.
So that's only 12.
That's 12 kids.
Yeah. But because you remember, you're talking about some very significant impacted students who have
room that we're adding on that they could use.
It's very significant needs that are one, two kids, and you need that extra support.
Okay, so when we were talking about, you mentioned 7 million. Is that 7 million?
How is that?
Is that right 7 million? When I heard that number, and I wrote myself.
Hang on, John.
When I heard that
I
number,
I don't math adds up.
No, when I wrote that, when John said that number, I believe that's our total special education budget, but I'll look to Karen.
No, I don't know about the total budget, but the 60% number, it's about 60% of the special ed budget goes towards outplacement of our kids because of the significant cost.
Okay.
So that was where I think the last time we had that 60% figure.
Thank you.
The confusion around that. And, Bob, do you know off the top of your head the total special ed budget?
$6 million.
So that's where...
Okay, so we got greater clarity.
Okay, I was off by a million.
But it's $6 million total.
But 60% of the $6 million, that goes outside our district.
3.6.
3.6. Is that what we're saying? Or is it $6 million tuition that we go out? Because I thought that was...
The way I'm understanding it, if it's 60% goes outside, only 12 kids can come back.
Yes.
Is what we're looking at. But those are 12 kids who would be back in our district with our programming, where we had also opened the programming up for other students in other districts.
Right. But go back to the budget. Too.
The budget is huge. The tuition costs we're paying are astronomical.
Over $2 million.
Over $2 million in tuition costs alone.
Between CASE and other surrounding school districts. Tuition.
John, can you hear Bob?
No, I can't. I've now heard a number 2 million. So I know last time we discussed
come a little closer
numbers, but we just really don't throw out numbers without really understanding them.
So 2 million in tuition costs for how many kids? Do we have that number?
You know, I don't know the exact number, but we pay over $1 million a year to CASE and then about another $1 million to surrounding school districts to house programs that we don't currently house in district.
Would it be a fair statement to say that if we as a board agreed with all these five premises, well, four, the first four, eliminate portables, all-day kindergarten, expand preschool, right-size schools, and now bring back these special ed kids, would it be fair to say that that's not all going to happen in one building? Or is there a way that that could happen?
No, I wouldn't say let's not fence that conversation yet. I'd say, you know, maybe it could. Maybe we build a 12-story building, you know.
The other thing is,
but we, you know, it's going to cost $100 million. We're not going to do that.
When you right-size the
school. Well, but I think that's the kind of thing we need to talk about tonight. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
But when you right-size the schools, like, to me, I don't think, for me, I wouldn't want to get into the detail that the weeds, as we call it, into where they are placed, at the rooms, classrooms, and all that. But what I do know is if you right-size the schools, you then have the flexibility to work with your consultants, with staff, to come up where is the best place. Until you right-size the schools, you're really hamstringing yourself. You're going to be limited to one option, if any option.
And maybe to further clarify, as we're talking about this, I don't think we've said in here that a value is to build a school to do this. What we're saying is these are our what we'd like to achieve. Then we've got to figure out how we're going to achieve that.
Which I think we need to get into.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I need to ask you a clarifying question. When you're talking about expanding preschool programs, are you talking about expanding the unfunded mandate that the state stopped funding? Are you talking about something that is a profit center?
I wasn't looking at it as a profit center. You can absolutely charge for preschool programs to parents, but I think the first step, because you wouldn't be able to offer it across the board. I don't think we would have enough space, even if we built a brand new school, to offer preschool to every parent who wanted 3 and 4 year olds to attend. But I think we need to be looking at targeted preschool. How do we expand our preschool programs that we already offer? Some of that could be still subsidized by federal funding, but some of it would have to be taken on by ourselves. If you're ever going to close the achievement gap, I mean, it's a soapbox I've been on for a few months now.
Since we don't have capacity today, it would cost us no matter what. Even if
Correct.
It's funded, it would still cost us in terms of space and capacity.
Correct. Today, it absolutely would.
From my perspective, you know, that would be a lower value. I wouldn't see that as a priority in terms of these values. I mean, eliminating portables, clearly a priority. Right-sizing and providing the right type of facility, but I don't see that one, to me, as a high priority in terms of expanding the preschool program.
Okay, we've got that captured? Okay.
Well, that's one person.
Yeah.
One person. Because I would just...
Yes, that's John Kenwood for the record.
Yes, John Kenwood for the record.
Vice President.
Can I clarify something you said?
Sure.
You said that the preschool programs are mandated. They are not. And that was part of the board's decision
years ago. Yeah.
When we lost all that funding for 80 students to continue to take that out of our operating budget, because that is a value and that was a priority and still is a priority. So we could, as other districts, take away pre-K anytime we wanted to if we felt that was not a core value for the board.
I think what we're saying is it is,
but I just want to, for the record, clarify this is a good example of a priority, stated priority for the board as a board of education that we understand. Get them in early, and our mobility issue we've talked about a lot. When kids come in the third or fourth grade, we know many times we're playing catch-up. And so if we can have a program, pre-K program, where we're bringing in students and keeping them in the system, we have a much better chance of them excelling and performing at the level that they can.
I appreciate that. That's a good perspective because the board did make that commitment some years ago. I'm not sure
how many years ago. Just so we're clear, I guess
my perspective, Eric, is a little different.
Uh-huh.
As being a member of that board, I agree with you that we decided to continue to fund it, mm-hmm. but not expand it. In other words, we had the cap of 80 kids. We've always had that. When the funding dropped, we said we would continue to support it.
Correct.
I think it was probably more special needs type of preschool as opposed to preschool in general like they have in the community that parents send their kids to. And I don't think our discussion at that time was expanding the program. It was maintaining the current program that we have.
That's correct. That we made the commitment to maintain the current program with those 80 students. Yeah.
Right. So I would be fine with maintaining that under the conditions it's under, but not expanding it. I just don't think when it comes down to our solution and funding and all that, I think we're adding more than we'll end up being able to afford.
Appreciate it.
I would also say that to me, educationally, and Paul, I'd like your opinion on this, I think the all-day kindergarten would be something, because of just the sheer number of kids that it impacts, would go a longer way, you know, because of the number of kids it impacts, to getting them up to speed, handling the core, and then the expanding the preschool. I would prioritize the all-day kindergarten. I just think you get more kids. We need it for the Common Core. We already know we're behind because of half-day kindergarten. So that, to me, would be a priority over expanding a preschool program.
Yeah, if you were put me in a box and say you had to choose one or the other, I would struggle with it, quite honestly, because I know when three-year-olds who are significantly behind are given those opportunities. I've seen when preschool programs that are really effective, those results, those gains maintain over years. So I would struggle with it, but I absolutely would want both, but if we couldn't, I would love to see full-day kindergarten for all students in our district. So, yeah, I guess once you push me against the wall, I would have chosen full-day kindergarten.
I think
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Dan. I was going to say that this. The other thing I think we forget sometimes is we can have partnerships around this as well.
Yeah.
Certainly, we've done that with CASE. Are there opportunities to partner in order to build a more robust pre-K program? I know our teachers, when we had teachers come, to support retaining that funding for the pre-K program because of the level of instruction and what the kids gain out of it and then what they bring up to the kindergarten level. So, in some ways, back to Patrick's comment earlier, I think we should be creative as a board and not box ourselves in and say, okay, we've made a decision now, this is the only thing we can do, that we can be more creative. I've collected so much Daily Herald and Patch information about partnerships around this county in terms of engineering classes at middle schools with Aurora University, IMSA, so many things that we have the potential to be just as creative and have those business partnerships as well. So it doesn't put it out, but
no, I appreciate.
I understand you're asking us. And I guess I'll weigh in now since I'm talking, that I don't disagree with these. I still have an issue with Spalding. We got an email at the board from a community member who made a very good point, if you remember this. And he said, you spent so much time thinking that Spalding wasn't the right place. How do you support it now? And I think it's because push has come to shove, which is unfortunate.
Can you say that again, Erica? I didn't hear it. Don't do what?
I said we had an email from a community member a few weeks ago,
yep.
saying the board spent so much time over the last year saying that Spalding was not the best choice. How is it that we can come back to the table to defend that? Well, number one, the board has turned over, so there's new members and some new voices. But secondly, our attempt at trying to do in his email he said this, the creative and the big picture was wasn't going to happen in terms of the property at College Avenue. But every time I drive, by that property, I find that just a very difficult place to go back to in terms of where this district is. When Spalding School was there at the time, it made sense. I mean, the district looked very different than it did now. My other concern when we talk about right-sizing the buildings is going back to something that was brought up, and that is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that even if we build the elementary school, is it true that Churchill will still have the larger number of students? We're still going to have a 600-student school on that property, correct?
Correct.
So there's still going to be one of our schools that is pushing at the seams, depending on how we build out, et cetera. That's a concern. I agree with it. We need to right size as much as possible, but we also have the reality of having a school that still is big for its property.
But Churchill, the way we're going into phase one, we are giving the flexibility,
right?
So that right sizing doesn't mean all schools are equal.
Well,
I know, you didn't say that.
Right, right.
That's important. So we are expanding additional rooms and bathrooms.
Right.
You know, which helps in the right sizing ultimately,
right,
of church. But again, ultimately, what is the right size of that school with the property, and that's important for us.
Right.
Can I continue on your Spalding point, though? One of the things that's different.
And let me just put this out there. Our next section is locations.
Correct.
So I just want to make sure you balance between the values, and then you're going to have a whole opportunity to talk about the locations that I've heard about.
And I'm not going to go on other.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we stay focused on values.
It's going back to a general.
No, you're good.
It's a general concept that we're doing this in phases. It's giving us flexibility. It changes, and I wasn't on the board, so it is a new board. There's three new members. But your board didn't have 16 classrooms out there when they were looking at Spalding. Suddenly, Spalding's a different animal. I don't like Spalding. I'll put it out there. I don't like it for a lot of reasons. But one thing that's certain is that it's different. The equation's different because you're adding 16 classrooms into the district. So now Spalding, given it's so small in things, there are things you can do that still achieve what needs to be done. And I understand that's why it's a recommendation on your part,
yeah,
for other reasons too. And that's important because it's not apples to apples. It's definitely apples
that.
To oranges. And I like bringing that up because the two-phase thing, I think, is critical on how we're going to accomplish those reasons. As long as I'm talking, maybe you're not.
I was
going to
say, I just want to weigh in on the holiday kindergarten.
Please correct us if we have a catch-up.
Yeah, no,
you're not a fan of Spalding. I
didn't
record that, but I...
And,
yeah, you don't need to.
It'll be picked up.
This board has talked in this long-range plan a lot about full-day kindergarten. It's always been a conversation stymied by facility. And so, but as a value and as a core value moving forward, I agree with it 100%.
Okay, good. Yes.
So I don't know if this is a value or this is a solution, but we were having conversations about charter schools.
Magnet or charter?
Significantly.
Please correct me.
Just so you know, we're going to have a conversation on magnet versus traditional boundary as well.
Right, right.
So I have that as our third topic.
Right. And I know we were using magnet as a possible solution or solution out there. But is a magnet school not a, what is the term, in the column value that we want to use?
I think it could be a value.
I think it's an other consideration, the third column. Okay.
I think a value around that would be more on whether we value boundary changes, no boundary changes, moving kids, not moving kids. That might be the value that drives a solution. I'm not sure if magnet school is a value or not.
Magnet school could be a value from a choice perspective, because a magnet school would offer choice within the district.
Plus, there'd be a specialty associated with the arts.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Because of its uniqueness,
that may
be a value that the board says.
So I'm going to poke at that a little bit.
Okay.
let's take magnets not as a consideration for right sizing. People say they get emails and notes and all that from communities. I must be off the distribution list, but is choice a community hot button? Is I would rather go to a magnet school than my grade school.
It is not something that I've ever once heard here.
Okay.
Never.
Well, and that could be because that's not an option.
Right.
If it is an option, then maybe point. All of a sudden it's everyone will want it.
Yeah.
Theoretically, that could be a survey question.
That's a good point for, maybe a survey question, or maybe not for the survey we're doing right now.
Yeah, but the
facility survey.
The larger.
That's a good point.
It is.
It's something we haven't asked, because it hasn't been an option.
Because it's never been an option.
I think a value that has existed in previous committees has been the value of doing something consistently or equitably and fair to everybody in the community, not just one. And, that may drive magnet or not, but that's been one that's been talked about before. I'm not saying it's one that needs to be on this list, but it's just the value of, don't build a new school for one set of people. Make it equitable across the district. I don't know if that's a value or not. But
I've heard equity a lot.
Well, that's, John, to your point, thanks for bringing that up. That language is in a lot of our documentation around, I think the term has been parity. We know we're not going to be equal. We're not going to have 50-50-50%, everybody gets the same thing. It's not about same. It's looking at, the population and what the needs are for that population. Certainly we have distinct or unique needs across the district. But this board has spoken, in one voice of there needing to be parity when we turn this over to you when you started and said, look at where we are and make recommendations for where we might go.
And really, this night is about setting directions. Mm-hmm. It's not about making as you said earlier, Patrick, well, this is what the school needs to look like. This is about giving the staff direction as to where do we go? What do we bring back to the board for you to continue to consider? Because we're a long ways away from, this is exactly what this building should look like. But these values help set that stage for us. Are we on the right path?
So Erica, help me with this then. Are we saying that because we want to have parity, that we don't want that magnet school conversation has been had, and
No. When I use the term parity, it's been in relation to our facilities discussion, because there was a point in time where there was the suggestion put on the table, and actually it was by John, that the dollars go into one school, completely do it. It's a model school. Have everybody look at it, and that'll set the tone for what we do next. And we pulled back from that. It was a worthy, suggestion conversation. But the board said we have needs in every school, and we've put this out for so long. It's been 11 years. I brought documentation from this Blue Ribbon Committee from the year 2000. Some of the same things are still in this. And so I think that's where it evolves, is that parity in terms of every school so needing some improvement, enhancements, and with our change in populations as well, that I don't think magnet is off the table, because I think it's a separate discussion now, but parity among what the dollars that we have, the self-funding that we're looking at doing, what can we do that provides fairness across the district in terms of that?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? As long as it's not off the table.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's off the
table. Joe.
So a value I would add to this list?
Yeah, John?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't
know. No, keep going.
Now, a value I would, since it's a phase two, I think the value, we need some sort of engagement model with the community.
We're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that should be a value.
Okay.
So I was no on number three, the expand the preschool program. And the location, avoid land acquisition costs, I wouldn't have that as a value. I mean, maybe it'd be minimize acquisition costs, but I think one of our you know, if, for example, Spring did become available and it was cost effective and it reduced, you know, 16 portables, that's not something I don't think we should not consider. So I would take that one off the table.
Okay.
Just one thing I want to know is on the table or off the table. The phase two seems to be centered around a K through five. And with Spalding, it has to be.
I don't think we know that.
Yeah, I don't think it's on or off the table at this point. But go ahead.
Is K through five on or off the table?
Phase two is. So it says here.
That was the recommendation, but right.
A junior high is not off the table for phase two.
Oh, I see where you're going.
That's where I'm going.
In the last meeting that you guys had that I wasn't a part of, you prioritized a junior high over a K through five.
We did prioritize a junior high over a K through five.
Yes,
it was dependent upon the next conversation that Sam and I were to have with Wheaton College at that time, and as Wheaton College made it clear to us at that point was they were not interested in selling of their land, and if they were interested in it, it would be at a very different cost than what was offered to Wheaton College at that time. Sam, would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, that door is effectively closed.
The Wheaton College door?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That's the only land that we had.
There's other land, there's other designs that perhaps, you know, maybe it's a wish list, that could accommodate a junior high. And then if you have the junior high, the new junior high, that new building goes to all students.
That's always the intention. That was
right. And
what
then,
was driving that decision.
And then I'm going to flip over to this side where you brought up Magnet. Then that brings Hadley into play for... a magnet school that has a nice auditorium and other things if it was for the arts, because when we were talking in 727, that's kind of where the magnet was leading for the arts, but I'm not saying that's all it was, but that's one of the things that was discussed. I'm just asking, that's a question I'm asking. You know, is everybody just K through 5, or are they open to different phase 2 options?
Well, I feel like we don't have some of the data that, you know, in between then and now, you went back to talk to Dave Harris at the Park District, and there were some other pieces of land I know that Bob had looked into that we had had some information about the last time that were taken off the table because of location, but maybe that's changed. So.
And I had an update from Dave Harris. Unfortunately, they're not done with their study. They were hoping to be done in late November, early December, so perfect timing. I'll give Mr. Harris a call. We spoke. He said, no, they're not done, but they have not pulled Spring off their list. So let me do this. Do we feel like we have a good starting place for our values for board or for staff direction?
Well, has everyone weighed in on that?
I think maybe you're the...
I have not.
You're the only one.
You're the sole...
All right, so the limited portables, yes. Offer full-day kindergarten, I'm not sure. Expand preschool, I'm not sure.
Can you go back one more time?
Eliminate portables, yes.
Eliminate portables, yes. Offer full-day kindergarten, I'm not sure. Expand preschool, I'm not sure. And the reason I'm not sure for those is it is going to require an additional operating referendum expense, and I don't know if the number that we're going to put together for this referendum is going to be a number that is going to be palatable or not. And if we add all these programs, it's going to skyrocket, and then we're out of the box already. Right size school, yes. Avoid land acquisition costs. I'm not there yet either. I'm willing to talk about other locations, other sites, both Falling and Spring Avenue, and anything else. I'm very interested, Joe, in hearing where you think we could put another middle school.
So we'll get to that piece.
So we can move ahead.
Are you comfortable? You're good with the values you've shared? Those pieces are out there. One of the things that I think we heard consistently was land should not be on the values. That was one of the pieces that I put on there, that we put on there, that's not a shared value, that let's don't limit ourselves, I think is the best way that Patrick and others put it. Don't worry about that cost right now. Let's make sure we look at all options and keep ourselves open to those pieces. But other than that, we heard some consensus around full-day kindergarten. I was hearing 4 to 5 board members talking about full-day kindergarten, that was a priority of theirs. Those were some pretty consistent themes there. I don't see the board anymore to be able to... Yeah, or do a quick... I'm just trying to look through it to just do a quick summary of what we're seeing, if there are other pieces that are connected.
The template has been a little challenging.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow. It was just a normal little...
We've been hitting it.
Yeah, that's weird. So I'm just, John, we're just kind of looking over the list right now.
So consensus around full day K is what we're hearing.
No.
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, do you want to vote on each one and then you can weight the value, you know, a hand vote for each bullet point, and then you would know if it's a board. One vote or seven?
Well, really, the only ones we need to do that on is kindergarten and preschool, right?
Yeah.
So I'm willing to do that, just to give them an idea. I mean, we're not approving anything. We're just saying what our opinion is, right?
And that's, it is very similar to what we did last time.
And that's fine, but is that going to drive our discussion? So in other words, if a majority of us are in favor of preschool and kindergarten, then that's going to have an effect on the ultimate decision of the facility, right?
Well, I mean, it's gonna, the majority of the board feels that way, shouldn't it?
Yes. Well, yes. Isn't that why we have 7 members of a board, so that you can get tiebreakers and things? So, I mean, that's why we should.
No,
I get what you're saying, but I think it's a little premature in that we don't know, you know, the final cost and the numbers, and do we need an operating referendum? Do we not? I mean, there's many qualifiers on that.
Yeah.
But if we want to vote, that
qualifiers on a new school or anything else, I mean, we don't have that. We have phase one pretty well ironed out.
And let's remember this: it's early. We've got time to work this piece through to be able to capture our thoughts right now. Maybe our best place where we're at, because this is going to be in front of the board for a long time. And what we would be able to do then is pull out 2 to 3 of those and then bring them to the board for conversation a little bit lengthier and more in-depth, and being able to bring the data back to say, okay, this is what special ed is. Special ed overall is $6.2 million. This is how many students exactly we have outsourced. So we're working off of, we'll chunk this out so you end up building exactly where you want to go. As opposed, I'm a little with Sam right now. I'm a little worried about throwing votes down quite yet.
Well, I think, though, for you to get consensus on an idea of a full-day kindergarten is pretty important. Because if you find out that you have 7 board members that are, yeah, it's fine, but it shouldn't be on that list, you need to know that now.
That would be a piece that...
Before you bet anymore, and with, to Sam's point, the cost matter. But phase two requires a referendum anyways that may not pass. So we're doing this with that knowledge anyways. And I understand an operating referendum for new programs may be needed. But if we don't vet that and then find out the cost, then we're probably not doing what we need to do. But if we determine now that expanding preschool is off the table, then you guys don't have to go and do all the analysis. So to me, I think getting directions is...
But I also felt like I did hear that. I heard kindergarten and preschool are a high priority by a number of board members, enough to, for me to be able to say, I need to bring some data.
Can we do a thumbs up or thumbs down? Because I don't know that I heard that.
Okay.
Sure. Let's go through each value, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I think you do each one. I mean, I think the consensus is on getting rid of affordables and right-sizing the schools.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
All right, eliminate portables, thumbs up or down?
We can't see John.
John, thumbs up or down?
Thumb, John.
All right, that's
yes or no?
That's 7 yes, 0 no. Full-day kindergarten, thumb up or down?
I'm sorry.
I see 3 up, 3 down.
John,
what are you, John?
John.
Full-day kindergarten.
This is one that I would have down. However, I feel that we need to plan for it. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's a value, but it's something we need to plan for.
It's a consideration.
Because, it could be mandated. So,
John, are you suggesting that this is something important for Paul to do some more research on?
I think it needs to be planned for so we can, for whatever we end up doing for phase two, one of the questions that we should be able to answer is, does phase two allow us to have all-day kindergarten or not? And if it does or doesn't, what's the cost of that? And then we can make the decision based on that.
So it sounds like cost and benefit.
So for you, for the sake of this, would need to say yes for me to move forward, because right now it would be four no or yes.
I'm saying yes for planning, but I don't necessarily know that it's a bad thing.
Exactly. That's all we're saying.
These are what the votes for planning. It's not for do you want it, do you want to fund it, do you want to do it?
Well, then that's
where I guess.
That's a different.
But I thought that's what the vote was.
No. I'm glad you asked the question, because that's not how I voted.
Can I make an objection that we adjust our vocabulary? You're getting consensus, but you're not voting. Just because it could be confusing to people.
I think an interesting piece. We were 203 phased in their full-day kindergarten. That was after almost 3 years of board discussion and vetting around it. I mean, this is not turnaround time. So 203 now is into their next phase, which is going to be rolled out to all schools. So my understanding in terms of consensus is, do we believe as a board that there's value in looking at this and seeing how we might move forward with it? In just anecdotal conversation, anytime full-day kindergarten is brought up, we get response, positive response. I'm not saying it's a huge number or anything like that, but it's certainly something that parents over the years have talked about. So I think that's all we're doing, is just what direction are we setting that we believe is important.
Well, I don't know, because I mean, of course, I would want to look at all day kindergarten. Right. And each of these things, I might not agree with it tonight, but I may be persuaded at some point with additional information. So I think that was my whole point, and maybe we shouldn't be voting now, but
I totally agree. And the way I see those two values is, I'm trying to go back, I always try to get out of it, but I always fall back into it. You're looking for a mission statement for this phase two. And personally, I think the mission statement is right-sizing schools. That's your core thing you want to do. You want to right-size your schools, and then everything else is wants. You know, I want pre-day preschool. I want kindergarten. I want to bring our special ed kids to it. We need to right-size our schools. That's our core thing. And then, you know, our box is we need to right-size our schools, and legally, we have to get rid of the portable. So that's, you have to do that. And then everything else is a box on top of that.
All right, so can we agree that there are various levels of support for these values, but yet they are there, and we need to kind of move on to the next phase of the...
Or we're going to be here until midnight.
I would say take out the expanding of the preschool program. I don't think that's a value. That's my opinion.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion. But...
Yep.
So, all right. So let's move.
So
on.
We'll continue to move forward. We will bring chunking out information to the board.
And I suggested that we add one, engage the community.
We captured that piece, and we'll also talk a little bit more about that on the community engagement communication aspect.
All in the federal.
So right now, I think you did kind of reach somewhat consensus that these two are strong priorities of the values, with the eliminating the portable and right sizing the school.
That
was pretty consistent. And then it sounded like full day kindergarten, bringing back our special ed kit. Those are, I don't know what's going on. We're not pushing this one.
that's gotten us to move on.
Yeah.
This is how the
discussion. Now you're on test Chrome.
That
is crazy.
Okay, so what?
Okay,
what,
so the next, would we grab up our, pull up our next section?
Paul,
around, yes, sir.
Paul.
Yes, sir.
Quick question on the values. When you say the staff, who did that consist of?
The cabinet.
Okay.
Although CIT and Team 21 weighed in.
Thank you. That's an important piece. Well, yeah.
Who did?
CIT and Team 21.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was good. The next piece will be under location. Well, we'll go to boundary. That's good.
Okay.
That's good. This is fine.
I only had two little sheets there. So.
There's a third one on location that I sent.
So there's three. It's values.
That's okay.
We have an agenda. It's values, boundary, magnet school, and then it's going to be location.
Location. We'll have that next piece.
Can I ask a question? Because I don't know if it covers in any of these three, and it was brought up in our meeting today that a few of us were at mm-hmm. at Lincoln, and it goes a little bit more towards the end, which is the communication. How do you get a referendum? Is it the feeling of the board that we're maybe that's not the right. Do we lose anything by solving some of the problem now? Do we lose leverage with getting the referendum passed? And I know where I'm at.
I would say yes.
But so you're saying that if we start to solve the problems now, we are giving up something that we view as leverage right now to get a referendum.
Who's saying that?
John's saying
that. Yeah,
wait, is that right, John?
I would say it a little differently in that I think that passing a referendum in the community will be difficult for many reasons. I think one of the few hopes of passing a referendum would be around eliminating the portables. And as I said in our last discussion, when you get rid of half of the portables, and then you go to referendum, and essentially you're only getting rid of, you know, you're putting a referendum together to really only get rid of four more portables in the K-5s, I feel that that's a tougher sell. And I do feel that you probably put yourself in a weaker position to pass a referendum.
Why do you feel that way?
Well, you know, you've solved a big part of the problem, and you're going to go out to the community for a phase two and ask for a lot of money, and it's a lot of money to solve what will be perceived as a much smaller problem because you have, I forget, I did the math last time, but after phase one, what do we have in the K-5s? We have four portables left or six?
Well, there's.
I think it's six.
There's four at Lincoln.
Four at Churchill.
That's
okay.
Eight.
So to come back to this, because I've spent a lot of time today thinking about this. So to come back to this, to agree with you, I need to feel confident that the community, which includes 80% of the people who don't have kids in District 41, care about the portables, that's an issue to them. And I think that everybody at this table just manifested that it's a huge issue with us. But I think passing a referendum is going to take some real convincing, and I don't think that by itself will do it. So
yeah,
my knee jerk in the beginning is to think, wait, we don't want to eliminate portables if we need to use eliminating portables as our reason. But I also don't think the bigger, we just said two things we agree on, is eliminating portables and right-sizing the schools. And even if you eliminate all the portables, you still don't have the schools right-sized. So I think the referendum is going to come back to what does it mean to right-size a school, and what are maybe some of the programs that we need to achieve, budget things like you brought up about, can we pull some kids back in to make them back in the neighborhood schools, and maybe it's not just about the portables, but for us, because we're so close to it, it's about the portables.
Right.
And that's what I want to make sure I vet out of my head. So I can
and it goes back to when you right-size the schools, you are going to be able to provide flexibility within your school district for the changes that are going to happen that we don't know are going to happen. So all the boards before us, you know, 50 years old school is the youngest school we have.
Yes, it is.
You know, so have not done that and put us in the pickle that we're in. And it's not our, it's not my goal to sit there and do the same. The 16, and then the other bonus of the 16.
I don't understand what you just said.
That's fine. Let me finish. The 16 classrooms provides a picture of what is the vision of flexible classrooms in user format. They're going to see it with our kids using these rooms, the flexibility it gives to the educators, and then you're going to go out to Rock Darnum, which is a plus. And that may be a small plus to the negative that John's talking about, but let's not forget about that plus. You know?
I don't disagree with that. That's actually what I've been saying. I think Erica brought it up earlier, is if we did a school and did it with the end goal of right-sizing it, 21st-centuring it, and whatever else if we want to do to it now, and it with the money that we have in reserves, which incidentally is referendum money anyway to begin with, if we did that and in parallel look to put forth a plan to the community and do a referendum, to me that was all win-win because we weren't losing any time. We were still moving forward with doing that, but we were doing it as phase one and phase two in one building, and then people would see it, and in parallel running a referendum that gets us to our end game. What it doesn't get us, at least the plan that I just proposed, what it doesn't get us is it doesn't get us doing two buildings this summer and then the other two the following summer. It just gets us one that's all phase one and phase two, meaning all right-sized, meaning flexible classrooms and all that, and serves as a model for people to see and help sell the referendum. Joe, I think I agree a lot with what you said in that second part. I didn't understand the first part. I think I agreed a lot with what you said.
So, Sam, how do we put a period on this conversation? We're going to do it or we're not going to do it?
Well, I was just going to say two things. John, you have brought up this idea before, and this board talked about it, and this board decided to go in a different direction, and we have come up with phase one. We're out to bid. And, that might have been a great idea, but it hasn't been embraced by the rest of the board. So,
So carry on is what we're saying.
Well, I think that's what we're saying.
Get on board, carry on.
And I really do, John, appreciate what you're saying in terms of that it's part philosophical and part practical in terms of what's the best understanding that we can give the community or the best sell to get them on board. I cannot in good conscience continue this conversation and not move forward with some facility improvements. We have kids in situations and in schools that are way over capacity and have been for years. And it's time to show, this is my practical application of it, to show the community that we can, through self-funding, and in an expedient way, efficient way, creative way, still building off of our long-range plan with 21st century learning initiatives, create a better space for students, if that's part of what a Board of Education does, which I believe we do. It does not preclude us from being flexible and creative in the next phase, but I cannot in good conscience look at kids and see them, you know, hear from parents of Lincoln, Churchill schools all the time, other schools, walking in the middle of winter, going out in portables, enough.
True,
I want
ahead.
Us to move.
I agree
John,
with that.
John, hang
my plan
John.
Doesn't stop that. I agree with that.
Well, okay.
Don't characterize my plan as not moving forward with that.
John, you said something, and I just need to ask you a clarifying question. You said that the reserves are based on a referendum. Could you explain what you mean?
Well, I mean, all our money is, I mean, our, you know, our money, it comes from levies and referendums, right? So.
Right, but our reserves and the money we're using for this phase one did not come from a referendum. It came from over time from.
No, it did not come. It did not come from a specific referendum question geared towards eliminating portables. That's correct.
Right.
Just one point. John's point, and I agree with Sam. We wrapped it up very nicely. We talked about this, and we're moving forward with our plan. John's point has validity in the communication section, and I think we ought to go back to that when we get to the communication section. That's all. Because we need to communicate that approach.
All right. I had originally hoped to have this, the facilities piece, done in about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. It has taken us now over an hour just to talk about the beliefs, but that's okay. This next piece is around locations. Threw up what I've heard, no values assessed to it. You have Spalding, Spring, Maine, and there was at one point some interest in looking at Newton. I don't even know if I spelled Newton correctly, quite honestly, if that's the right park. This piece is really your opportunity to talk about this. I know we've talked already some about Spalding, that board members are hesitant around there because we've talked about it, or previous boards have talked about it.
Is this the workshop boundary versus Magnet?
No, this is location, location, location.
This is possible sites, John.
Where do you want us to spend our time having conversations on?
Spalding, Spring Avenue, Main Street, and Newton, which I assume is Newton Park.
We have Spalding up here as a building opportunity. Why can't Spalding be an asset for sale possibility?
It can, but we need another site.
Right, exactly.
Just one important thing today in the news, and most of you probably saw this, and maybe not everybody, but when we talk about Spring, we're in a pseudo competition created with the police department, and it seems that the police department is looking at Panfish Park, and it's more where their focus is for their $17.5 million facility that they're talking about.
Where?
Panfish Park, which is south of Roosevelt Road.
So one of the conversations that I had or an email that I received from Mr. Harris was to gauge our interest in Spring, because their recommendation is not back yet, but they wanted to know where's the board at, where's the district at with Spring and continuing this conversation. I did not email back. Wanted to wait until this conversation occurred.
I think in that same article, Joe, it's mentioned something about Spring Avenue having an $18 million price tag. Is that?
This article is from the patch. Didn't have much about it. Just said.
Well, I think the Daily Herald may have mentioned.
Well, the consultant does not. I think the consultant didn't prioritize Spring as their number one recommendation so far.
What are you talking about, John? Are you talking about the village now?
The park.
Yeah, the village for the police department. I don't think Spring was the number one choice. It was a choice.
What they refer to as a difficult site. To achieve what they wanted to achieve. So they pretty much took it off the table, is my understanding.
Okay.
Which goes with what John was saying.
Can I ask you a quick question? I feel like we've talked about Spring Avenue. I mean, I feel like I'm having deja vu. But with this whole list. I thought we took Main Street off the table just because.
I just wanted to put a big X right through it right here.
You know, out of any recommendation from the Illinois State Board of Education about location, that nixes it completely.
Right, is there anyone that still feels Main Street's a viable option?
I don't want to say it's not a viable option. I'm going to lean on the past experience of the boards that had that conversation.
Yes.
But to what Joe said earlier about that has to be part of the communication plan. The reason why we are not doing Main Street is because this
yes,
is
on
fair
Main
enough.
Street.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Spring Avenue, we had talked about this, and it was in dependent upon some of the conversations you had with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like that's still...
About mid-February, they were anticipating the final report to be released.
Vote on this, or suggestion on this, rather, would be to table it until we hear back. And at the same time, wanting to hear from Ron, because I know that I thought we did some discussion around this in terms of what some of the problems were with them.
Which
A Spring Avenue. Years, like 3 years?
It might be.
I think.
That might be dated.
Yeah. Okay. And then New.
Well, I think maybe. So can Joe help us with news?
Yeah, no. I feel like I had to put it out there.
It's pretty simple. Yeah, I brought it up, but it's pretty simple. We're here. We're landlocked. You can't go grow land. I mean, we're not in Hawaii where volcanoes are going off.
You can't grow land.
So what you have to do, like it or not, if you don't want to use this Spalding site, you have to go out and form an alliance with whom owns the land. And there's two people who do. And only one of them has land that's large enough. I mean, Ackerman, they have extra land there. Newton's a big facility. It's not in our district. It's just out of it. Mm-hmm. And Spring's pretty small, and Main Street's even smaller. Spring has issues with floodplains and all that. So at the end of the day, we have to make, this goes to the communication aspect of this, we have to make a compassionate appeal to our other government agencies or whatever you want to call them, to our partners, and be true partners with them. And come to the table with something. This is we need, but what would we come to the table if we were at Ackerman or if we were at Newton, which are the two large ones? To me, we have to figure it out. You guys may, everybody in the audience, people listening, whatever, may think it's crazy, but if you're going to solve your problem, you better think outside the box, and you better look at the big parcels of land, because that's the only way you can get what we want done. And to me, if they say no, then they said no. But if you don't ask, and if you don't ask with a full plan, if it's just a conversation, because if I'm the park district and I own real estate in this area, what I would say is no. Because I've said this before, what I would do, they want, they're a landowner, and what they look at is what I want to get rid of, or because budget reasons or whatever. So they're going to go to their piece of real estate that they get leased usage out of, and they're going to put a high price tag on it, and then they're going to go down. That's just the facts of selling real estate. So at the end of the day, they may have, if you come to the table with a good enough package, and maybe one of these bigger parcels work, maybe they say no 50 times and it's the 51st time they say yes. Maybe you never get there and they never say yes. But if you don't try, to me that's a disservice to our community and to our students. That's how I see it.
So are you adding Newton and Ackerman to the list? Is that what you're saying?
Newton was on the list. I just was picking big parcels. I mean, there may be
I can't see the list.
Spalding, Spring Avenue, Main Street, and Newton Park.
But Main Street's got a big X in it.
Main Street is off. Ackerman.
Ackerman's not on the list, but we can put it on the list.
Well, we can. It's probably the same list as Newton, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because before I was on the board, I think there was discussions about acquiring Park District property in the Ackerman area. And that fell on pretty deaf ears.
At the park?
At the Park District. Yes, the Park District Board has turned over. Ackerman Park now looks a lot different than when that former school D41 board had a conversation with the Park District. So, when you say tough sell, that's a tough sell.
Everything's a tough sell, guys. Everything's a tough sell. It's our job to go do it. That's the communication part of this. We can get no's, and that's fine. And then what you're left with is what you have. And then all these people, including myself, who don't like Spalding, I'm gonna have to like it because it's what I'm left with. And then we're going to turn around and say, you better give us something. You make that Spalding look really good. And at the end of the day, that's all we have. That's all we have. But to me, let them say no. A tough sell. Anybody who owns property in this area of that magnitude, it should be a tough sell. They have an asset worth a lot. And how can we co-op with them? And we can't. I mean,
do we have a cooperative relationship with a park district in our existing buildings now? Do we share space?
Like the gymnasiums are used
Do they share?
There was an intergovernmental agreement.
Right.
Years ago,
I thought so. Right.
Yeah. They use our space.
Do we use?
We have
intergovernmental agreements with the park district for all of our buildings and fields, and we have an intergovernmental agreement with 87 for their use of Spalding for soccer lacrosse.
Well, so to Joe's point, but what do we use in there?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to ask.
They help finance
the
building.
They built the gyms for you.
They helped build
it. Exactly. That's their contribution.
Yeah. In perpetuity?
Well, those agreements are 40-year agreement has a long way.
It's
to go.
Been, and believe me, we looked at it a few years ago. So.
Well, that is good to know, yeah. And the reverse can happen.
Yeah. And I agree that Newton and Ackerman should be on the list because it just gives us more options. What?
Is Newton in our district or not?
No,
it's not.
Not today.
Does that create a problem or not?
Yes, I'll send you a document that we have around acquisition. I'll send those pieces out to you on some of the constraints and the pieces that we would have to overcome.
Are they? I mean, at one point, you know, we were looking to take the property just south of Newton. It was out of our district, but we thought there was a way to do some sort of there was something that was done where we thought we could overcome it. Is that, I know there are constraints, but can it be overcome if the property is outside of the district, I guess is the question.
It's annexation. I mean, we would have to annex that land to come within District 41, which is a I can't imagine. There is a process, and I would assume there were some significant costs associated with anything along those lines.
And a unique aspect of Newton is that it borders our district, and there are no houses involved.
Yeah,
so when you look at an annexation, you have to realize we're not annexing buildings, we're not annexing houses. It borders us now. We go right around it, actually.
Yeah, it's an odd.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if you look at the other district, Roosevelt Road is in between. So it's like a little island. It's like O'Hare Airport is to Chicago.
You could lease it on 100.
I mean, we can talk about these things. And for me, those Newton Park and Ackerman are firmly in the wish category. Because Newton Park,
yeah,
every...
I would say Newton's a waste of time. But Ackerman...
John, hang on. Every
I can't hear because people cut in and out. So.
All right. Every inch of Newton Park is being used and used almost all year. So to somehow convince the park district to sell us almost all of it, really, if you know, that'd be a great. I'd buy something from that salesman.
Well, see, I think.
And Ackerman is the same. Ackerman is the same situation.
I know you'd be right, but I think you're limiting it because you're not bringing anything else to the table.
I would ask that if we ask Paul to do some due diligence on this, that we set some time frame. I do not want you chasing. We don't have the bandwidth in terms of all that the district is working on right now, or the time really for the board to be making some decisions. So. We need a reality check from you, Paul, directly. You know, it's going to be the 51st no. So.
Oh, you already got a 50.
What I think we'll wait for is the Park District to come back with their formal report, and I think at that time, I think the Park District will be able to elaborate on what are their needs, where are they going, which will then help us either cross out or highlight a space that may be available to us. Basically, what I've heard is Main Street's off, everything is on, do a little bit of due diligence, but I will wait for the Park District to make their, you know, maybe they're saying Spring's their perfect location, that they are going to consolidate all of their materials and warehouses at that location.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does 89 own any property over here?
I'm like the last person to ask that.
They're always looking for 89. No.
I don't think anything across Roosevelt or Roosevelt.
The district itself?
Yeah.
Right. No, I don't.
No land or anything.
Yeah.
Not in terms of ownership.
Yeah, nothing over
89?
There.
89? Isn't Newton in 89?
Well, he said, does the district itself own any property over there?
Oh, district. Okay.
Yeah.
Paul,
I don't think they do.
I don't think so.
Quick question. How big is the Spring Avenue site? I don't recall.
15 acres, about half of it in a floodplain.
But a lot of it is in a floodplain, yeah.
Well, yes, it is. But, you know, the back area of Churchill is in a floodplain, but from what I understand, we're going to make that usable space. So, I mean...
You could come forward. There's a lot of room to come forward on that piece of property, but not as much backwards.
Is any of it a floodway or is it all in the floodplain?
I think the back where the dog run is, I think that's legally classified as a floodplain. So behind the building.
There's a difference between floodplain and floodway, and it's critical to
development. Well, yeah, I don't know that difference, but...
Does that make sense to everybody?
I think this is some good clarity here. So we'll just swing over to the next one, Karen. I apologize.
Is there any...
John, hang on one second.
We're talking park, and now I'm just going way off the ledge here. Any religious community, any churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, things that we think are
that
are
might be available?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean,
we did a site study 3 years ago, all of our parcels, and there, matter of fact, either Paul has the map or more than likely I have the map, where we circled all of parcels that were available. No, I should say available, but that would be worthy of consideration for the site of a building. And there were maybe 6 to 8 of them, and we kind of, well, we approached a lot of them. There was a couple up along North Avenue.
Okay. All right.
You know, we hired Ellen Krakow.
We hired
that report I sent out.
And then we did that several locations. In fact, that's how in part we came about. And that seemed to be that certainly it was the best. It was in district, site appropriate, et cetera. But there was a piece of property along North Avenue. But from a safety perspective, as we looked at egress, children, green space, I mean, things that you want to have, I think that would be a very difficult sell for the community. Because it's like a...
We looked at two sites along North Avenue. One is where that new Jeep place was actually built within the past year or two. Mm-hmm. And then the other one actually was just north of North Avenue. But if you go to that site, it's in a valley, and the power lines, ComEd power lines, run right through the property. Mm-hmm.
So in answering your question, yes, we did a lot of work and spent, you know, some dollars on trying to find...
Did you have something else you wanted to add before?
I was going to say the thing that changed from when we first talked to the Park District about Ackerman was that area, I forget the name of the street, but it's where they have bought a lot of the land there.
Just to the west of Ackerman?
It's just west of the entrance to Ackerman. There's a street there.
Lennox.
That area, I don't know that they have as much of an interest in that area as they used to, and that could be an Ackerman option. It still requires a lot of work and probably, you know, better pursuing that than Newton, but that could be an option for when you talk about
it. Okay.
Lots of trees over there, John.
That's a great space that they thought.
I think that's why it was eliminated several years ago.
Okay, so any other comments on location? We got Main Street off. So the next piece is this conversation around a boundary school versus a magnet school. Just the traditional boundary, you know, it set boundaries for all students in the district. Generally, the academic offerings are very similar from building to building. From a magnet, it's parent-student choice into the school. Attendance is not dependent upon where you live. Magnet schools offer a wide range of distinctive education programs. Some emphasize academic, such as math, science, technology, language, immersion, visual, performing arts, or humanities. Others use specific instructional approaches, such as Montessori methods or approaches found in international baccalaureate programs or early college programs. Can be either an elementary or a K-8, which is a different way of thinking about the problem. That it felt like we put it out there as well. So those are those two pieces that I put in for context.
So tell me clarify again, what is set, it's set boundaries, not set the boundaries. It's set boundaries, not set. For all students in the district.
So we know where Lincoln students, the boundary for Lincoln students
right.
are,
so
Churchill.
No,
that would be a very traditional boundary system, is that. And then a magnet is, you still have your boundaries for your other schools, but students throughout the entire district can choose to go into that school, no matter where your boundary is.
No, Eric, the set boundaries for all the students, it is, you have to reset.
Under the, but it's under the traditional bar. That's
yeah.
what I was missing.
Yeah, because we can't see the top, the headers.
The headers, right.
Yeah, you'd have to reset the boundaries if...
Yeah, you... We've had some technical difficulties. We should have just went back to the chart paper. We know how to operate chart paper and pens.
I don't know. For me, I mean, when you see that right there, for me, it just popped up in my head that traditional school to me means Spalding site. And magnet school means Spring Avenue site. And
I never looked at it like that.
And Drew just mentioned it as well, but it's an interesting approach when you say magnet school K-8, because then suddenly... you're dealing with the Hadley problem that we're all not talking about.
Felt like I wanted needed to put it out there.
Option.
Felt like it was important to put that K-8. I know that one's a really, that's a very different way of looking at this problem.
Paul, how does the district administration decide what the magnet school would focus itself on?
It goes back to what Patrick and Dean said earlier. You really do survey. You've got to have that.
It's the community parents.
It is.
So it's not a board decision. It's not an administration.
You
decision,
ultimately,
but it's a community decision.
Yeah, because if you don't have anybody showing up, it doesn't work.
And
you have to have that energy behind it. You have to have that excitement to say, "Wow! In our district, we have within our District 41 boundaries, we have X amount of students who are attending arts." Outside of what we're doing, why aren't we offering that and seeing how the arts and the academics combine?
That's why I think you can get to finance and numbers and moving kids around, but you also need to add emotion to this. And I think the magnet choice brings emotion to a referendum to the parents of the students there, but also the community that says. If this referendum passes, it'll be a magnet surrendered around the art history
whatever
it's going to be.
Is,
and then
yeah.
I think you might get more community. Oh, I can see that. And it's a K-8. I can see that.
But
there's
we
could your
be able to assess some of that by whether or not we have community input on even an interest.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, so I, for one, would want to see more information on... can a K-8 magnet school fit in the Spring Avenue site? Or are we limited to the Spalding site?
Mm-hmm.
Because that changes the equation immensely.
Yes.
As I sit here, maybe my position is evolving. That's a nice popular term now. But for me, the best solution would be two schools. One at Spalding, a traditional K-5 at Spalding. And a magnet school with Spring. Now, I would admit.
Were you saying both of those, or did you prioritize those?
I'm saying both. I'm about to prioritize.
Okay.
Because I think that's firmly a wish, because the referendum number would be very large, I would venture a guess. But I'd like to know what it would be. And I think we could probably ballpark it, if nothing else. But as Patrick is mentioned before, there would be a little bit more emotion behind a magnet school concept versus a K-5 in the northeast corner of our district. I think that's probably a valid statement. So, as I said, I would like to see how the numbers fall out with both of those options together. I guess if I had to choose, I would lean toward the magnet school option.
And one unique way of looking at magnet school, and this is pretty typical with the magnet schools, they start small and they grow. So that's something that you could be looking at, you know, partnering with, you know, Wheaton College in that space over there to say, we're going to start here. We're going to grow it. We're going to do, we're going to start K1, 2, 4, 5, if you're thinking K8. And then we would go 5, 6, and you would grow up. You would expand it both ways. So you in 2 years, you have a full built-out K-8 program. It's a unique way of looking at space and using space differently, especially when you're thinking about a K-8 in magnet. There's sometimes you don't always have the same athletic. You don't. It's not the same. And I think for the board, that would be a piece that would be pretty important. This is going to look. A magnet school can look very different than your other traditional elementary or junior highs.
Have you ever seen a magnet school cooperate with their feeder high school? In terms of like the senior class doing advanced studies or parent-teacher guide aid?
I'm just glad you brought that up. Why I gravitate more to a K-8 magnet than just a elementary magnet is you've done this incredible work from preschool to fifth grade. So the junior high has only limited options for electives, where high schools have a much broader, more comprehensive elective programs for kids to go into. But that's where you do get that cooperation for them. Their drama programs, the whatever their focus is, you do have those pieces where they're connecting to each other. And for us, we always, all of our kids go to West. So you have that really unique opportunity to make it a little more seamless.
Yeah, I guess I was saying, you said that to bring educators or guidance from Wheaton College, but again, I'm solutioning mm-hmm. here a little bit, but the magnet school could be a K-8 school that we say that's also we're also going to try to coordinate with our high schoolers to participate in student teaching program or
guidance. Oh, I get you.
Again, to not make more emotion, bigger mm-hmm. audience to the 87 group to say, okay, this is how it's going to affect your so.
One thing the magnet school does for you too, it differentiates you from other communities, and you know it could be a draw for Glen Ellen itself, or at least the north part of Glen Ellen. Mm-hmm. And that then reaches out to those people who don't have students, because if it is a draw, you know you're affecting real estate values because then more people want to move in. Just like we have an issue with supply of open land, we have a supply. Constant supply of houses is not growing that much, so that increases value.
If it is, if the research shows, does it draw people to your community when you have a successful magnet school? That's the question. If that's the case,
Paul, is this something that you would survey?
Yeah, I definitely would, John. I think.
I mean, in the survey that. Sorry, I'm still asking the question. Is this something you would survey in the survey that's going out now?
No, it would be the one that we would do to the larger community in the probably fall is what we would be recommending, maybe that October timeline, that we would do a much broader survey. That's where I would ask those questions, John.
And you don't think that asking parents today whether a magnet school, you know, in the survey we're doing now, that if a magnet school were something they'd be interested in, you would want to wait till October?
I guess I worry about building the background knowledge. I'm not being disrespectful, but when we brought it up in August or July, I mean, the board didn't have an understanding. And it's easy to confuse it with charter schools. And that's my biggest concern is they're vastly different. Charter schools are run by, they're not run by the district. They're connected to the district. They're just because of their charter is approved by us. So I would want to make sure that we do communication around it to really solidify what is a magnet and what it's not. That would be the only reason
I would slow it down, John.
And also what it's a magnet for.
Yeah.
And I want to keep the conversation and the spirit and the integrity of that survey that we're trying to do now as pure as possible. You know, let's not I won't say muddy the waters, but let's not add confusion to a parent that's filling this out. Say, oh, well, now we're talking about magnet school. Did I answer and ask and answer these questions differently? So,
I have two questions, not to be discussed, but just Paul for you. One is with regard to magnet, and you answered this a little bit, but I think we have to give thought to this. Is this in part to address the population issue? And the other one is, what is the compelling reason to consider a magnet school option? We have a 3,600 student district. Some might say it's too small, and we would, this term was used earlier, cannibalize our student population out of schools. That may or may not happen, and it might be a good thing to allow that choice, but I think that that's a really important question to ask. What's the compelling reason for it?
And those are pieces that we would bring back to how successful are magnet schools in a smaller district, because I've seen them in large districts. They're not as common in smaller districts, and I think your point is a good one that we need to study.
And would a K through 8 or a K through 5 magnet school right size
the district,
the existing buildings? Is also a question.
So what I heard was we have still a lot of questions on this that we want to continue to explore and bring back to the board. Would that be a fair?
Yes.
Belief on my part. I don't want to say consensus or vote.
The idea is to kind of, I'll say, funnel this conversation into some collaborative goals between the administration and the board. So when we do have that community survey, we're going out saying, this is what we think. Let us know if we're right or wrong.
That would be the goal of this work, is to give us actionable items, and I'm feeling like we're starting to create those actionable items for staff to be able to bring information back to the board. I feel like we're a long ways away, but you've given myself and the team the data that we need to bring back to you guys to continue these conversations in smaller chunks. I feel very good about that.
I heard myself say that magnet school or a traditional school is a good idea. I'm not sure I heard everyone else say that.
I'm not there yet. I need more information. I think it's worthy conversation, but I want to know why we're doing it. Is it to address the population issue? Then let's say that. We want to draw down the numbers on the schools, and this is an option we're going to look at for doing that. So what's the reason? What's pushing us to do it?
Okay.
Do you want to?
Okay. So that's two sort of, let's explore the magnet. Is that enough to proceed? I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I'm intrigued by the idea. I don't have a lot of information to jump up and down and say, need to jump in with both feet. But I'm intrigued by the idea. I'm intrigued by the fact that we wouldn't have to redistrict, and it would solve some transportation issues. So there, I see there's a lot of interesting concepts that, if it can be looked at, it's worth further study.
And I'm on Drew's wavelength or whatever. That's how I see the magnet school. The benefits of the magnet school and the learning characteristics are whatever they are and what they be. But my thoughts are, by having a magnet school, you kind of limit the impacts of redistricting, reboundering. It's a choice. If you go to that school, you're going to that school. I'm not busing you there. You're going there. So there's probably a number where you just think, okay, it's 600 full and 600 people chose to do this. We didn't have to change boundaries, and we didn't have to bus somebody to a new district. I'm looking at it as a facilities right-sizing issue, not an educational issue, which is different than.
And hopefully, there's an educational piece to that as well. And it's the the choice piece, but I mean, if there's a need in the community, whatever that need is, that need could be tremendously compelling as well.
Mm-hmm. We send some of our special ed kids outside the district right now. Mm-hmm. We have a land problem. Mm-hmm. One thing we should think about with magnet school is, does it have to be within District 4 law? You just said people have to get there on their own. There are other districts around us who are saying they've got extra space. Maybe a way to solve this, if you go with a magnet school, is you could say, well, what happens if the magnet school's down in the southern part of Laurel? And we manage it, and we lease it from them, and we do that, and we don't have to buy a school or build a school or anything else, and we solve our space problem. If a magnet school is a draw, and people want to do a magnet school and want to get there themselves, you could do this and maybe not need a referral.
The only problem with that is it would be a temporary solution. Because if that, wherever that district is, they say, sorry, we need it back.
Well, you'd have to lock it up.
Well, right, but I mean, you got to agreed, it could be, that's an option that we could explore. But
I mean, we just talked to the Park District locked up some 40 years. I'm pretty sure we could lock up somebody else for 50 or 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely do that, and actually, that you might actually get out of it if your student population falls in the future. So at least it does have its
I mean, just as long as we're bringing up the concept of moving the kids around.
Yeah, the only issue
we're not moving them, they're moving them.
One of the negatives, which you know is obvious, but the farther away it is, the less people participate. So then
I would argue that people in the southern end of our district might be closer to some of the schools there than if there's up at Spalding.
Absolutely true to that.
So don't, that's a, let's not limit ourselves.
I think it's good.
Outside the box. I say, a magnet school seems to be a really good idea, at least right now. I'm warming up the idea since the last time I was in my groups. And it does the things that you said about the redistricting. You know, because if we put another school in here, and it's a K through 5, we have to redistrict. And now not only are you asking for a referendum, you're also asking for redistricting at the same time. If I vote yes on the referendum, then I know my kid may go to a different school. Okay, so that makes a referendum on my charter. There might be a different way to do this.
And I think that's that opportunity to look at our space. And why I mentioned Wheaton College is that other facility that is within our district. How are they using that space? And is that an opportunity to rent from them long term? And using it differently, because it sometimes the magnet schools don't have to look like the traditional schools, and that's what's unique sometimes about them is their space is unique. Well, there you go. Well, you say that, but
don't,
I mean,
don't laugh.
I've been a part of a district that's open schools in a storefront. I mean, we've taken over storefronts that usually cities or towns don't like that because they ultimately see they're going to lose revenue. But after the property sat open for 10 years, they were like, okay, you can have it. Their wisdom, we outweighed their wisdom.
He's still getting his Dominic's payments right now.
Yeah.
All right, so.
So I feel like.
John, did you want to weigh in here?
I think Dean may be onto something there with the magnet school outside of the district that might provide more flexibility. I think on the school district south of us, the one building that they felt they could do away with or possibly do something with, wasn't that in the south?
It is.
West corner?
You're right. And something I want to comment on for the whole board today. We're supposed to be bringing up ideas, and we're trying to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I negotiate things for a living, and you don't want to do that. Because just because someone's opening salvo is, I want you to use the school down south, doesn't mean that's where it has to end up. If a park district says, I want you to buy spring, it doesn't mean that's where it has to end up. And even I would argue, and I did at one point at Wheaton College, that going there and telling them you want to take their land is different than saying, hey, I have a really great idea of making your school a better school at the same time we make our school a better school. There are really creative things we want to open ourselves up to and not say, oh, we asked that once and they said that. We have to get a package and think about how do you sell that? How do you get what's important to them and see if you can match it up with what's important to us and find some common ground. That's what we need to do to come up with this.
Right. So where I was going to go is, you know, if that's the case, you know, a magnet school, I think what Paul said is we've got to sell it and people got to want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of, you know, if we get a location somewhere and people don't want to go there, aren't willing to take their kids there, then we have a problem. So we just have to keep that in mind.
Sounds like another survey question, Jeff.
This is a lot of community engagement.
Paul, I think you've said this, but I just want to validate. If I have a magnet school, I'm responsible for taking the kids there, but is there a situation where, you know, a group of people say, you know, I can't provide transportation, but it's not fair that I apply to the magnet school and I get in, or I can't get in because I can't provide transportation. Is that ever an issue, or is it just so black and white that, you know, that's not a cause for someone forcing us to provide transportation?
I don't think it's ever black and white. I think it ultimately comes back to administration, board, and creativity. How do you want to do this? How do you want to attack that issue? Because it is important to understand that we want a true cross-section of all of our demographics and all of our students to attend our schools. So you want to make sure if transportation is limiting some of our students and parents to get there, we've got to be able to figure out how do we support them? Right. How do we help them if that's a problem for them to, because they don't have a car, they don't have this piece. But that's solution finding. But there's no one way of doing transportation for magnet schools. That's all I'm saying is the board, us, would have to decide on what value you put towards that transportation.
Okay, well, so what I thought I heard someone say is that it addresses transportation costs, and the question I'm asking is it perfectly legal to say we will only offer a magnet school if you provide the transportation?
Yes.
I know we may decide to do that, but is it perfectly legal to do that, or can some people say it's not fair that there's a magnet school that my kid can't take advantage of because I can't provide transportation?
Yes, it is perfectly legal. Some of the foundational work on magnet schools, that it is choice, that they are there for you. A vast majority do not offer the transportation to it.
Okay, and then one other question about a magnet school. You can't disguise a new K through 5 or K through 8 building as a magnet school. You truly have to offer something different that does not exist in your other schools. Is that true or not true?
That's how I would describe it, and I think that's how many describe it. It is a unique emphasis at that school, and that's that draw. That's that community draw to say, wow, I want to be a part of that. I've got to go there for whatever the X factor is.
Is that X factor, though, is that what makes it, in the eyes of whoever, that it is a magnet school and falls under different rules? In other words, it seems like somebody says, okay, I certify this as officially a magnet school that allows you to apply different rules to it than your other schools. Do you have to go through a process?
It's the board. The board said that, staff would bring forward a recommendation of talking about, the pros and cons of the magnet school, and that's what the board would make those decisions upon, that it's going to be fully choice. One of the magnet schools we had opened in Adams 12 was, it was a unique partial boundary because we wanted to ensure that we were impacting the students of the neighborhood school, but we also wanted the choice option for all students throughout the entire district. So you do somewhat make up the rules on how people are going to apply to it and put those out for the community to say, I want a choice in. I don't want a choice in. It's not as clean. It's not as black and white.
I guess I'll
bring that to you.
I'm not suggesting we would do this,
mm-hmm.
but it just seems that there would be districts that would use the magnet label to avoid certain costs and rules and regulations. That's why I was asking about those.
Okay, so
officially certified or
one of the things, it would be open to all students. Students receiving specialized instruction, ELL, because at times charter schools can do that. Charter schools can say that this is exactly what we're going for, and I'm sorry you don't fit that criteria for us because we are a public school, and that's the difference. This is a public school, and it's open to our students within District 41 that we have to allow our kids to be able to attend it.
I apologize, Paul.
No, you're
probably
good.
Breaking a norm of collaboration. we're going down. We're talking about magnet school solutioning. And that's John's got some really good points, but we want to take those and have those conversations, fruitful conversations, at a later time. This is just more broad stuff.
No, I'm not trying to solution. I'm trying to make sure I understand the definition.
Yeah, but, I mean, I would say your questions are good questions, and I think we all have questions about magnet schools. I don't know if this is the right forum to have it.
I think what we're saying is we need more information.
Yeah.
Okay, so is everyone comfortable with where we are
yes.
this evening with what we've discussed and what we've asked Paul and the administration to come up with?
Yes.
Are we all comfortable with that?
Yes.
Okay, great. Anything else, Paul?
No. No. Thank right, goodness there's nothing else going on in our district.
9:47, we do have to go to closed session. I am suggesting a 3-minute break before we go to
We still need to do communication and community engagement, which is a little scary.
Okay, well,
so
let's take that break.
Okay, we'll still take the break.
Let's come back at 9:50.
3 minutes?
That's good.
All right.
And then continue. So time's 9:47. John?
We're not quite there yet. I'll try to get us there.
All right, now we're back. It's 9:54. We have, I was got ahead of myself in suggesting closed session. We still have another item to discuss.
Yeah, and again, recognizing the time constraints for staff and everybody else, I would like to put out a couple ideas. Pieces that we've been talking about within cabinet to begin this ambassadorship, and that's a term that I think is really important to our district, and one that has a lot of value in it. How do we become greater ambassadors as the staff and as the board? So what we would like to put out, two ideas that we would like to pursue would be, one, a small group from our staff reaching out to all the schools and having an opportunity to sit down and what I coined as a listening tour, going to each of the buildings to talk about academics, again, just a variety of different topics for our staff to give us direct feedback around how are they feeling on these pieces, what does it look like, where are they at academically, not just from the very tight issues of multi-age and teacher specialization, because I know that gets a lot of the buzz, but we do a heck of a lot more around here than those two pieces, but to really have conversations with our staff. So the next piece, where I believe it'd be a really nice partnership between staff and board, is to set up listening tours for our community, and that we would have maybe two evening sessions and one Saturday session to allow for people to be able to attend these. Again, Julie would had an idea around setting it up through table groups, so we would ask for RSVPs so we know how many tables, how many board members we would need to go, and then each one of us would bring in a topic. So I'm going around and I would have a note taker with me, and my topic is academics. Erica's with me. She's going to be, or she's a, she would be within that group. She's talking about facilities. And we would have these different topics where board members, myself, would be rotating through these tables. We would have a note taker that would be able to capture these pieces. So we would focus the conversation so they're not hearing, so they're not having to regurgitate the same information from board member to board member or superintendent, but they have an actual topic to discuss, have conversations, but then also have the community have an open moment. You know, it's almost like that open mic opportunity to talk to board members, to the superintendent on those pieces, to get a real sense of where are we at. And one of those topics could be community engagement. What does our community feel like? What are their feelings toward how do we reach out? How do we have these conversations? Are you reading, you know, if it were a District 41 parent group, how is it best to communicate to you? So it would be those types of topics that we would begin to have those conversations with our community. From there, what I would recommend, then our team would come back and talk about what did we hear from the community at large, and then what did staff hear from the teachers, the overall staff throughout the district, to see what themes we have going on, the needs that are apparent, and what are the areas we're doing really well on? Because I believe we do a lot of great things around our communication, and to bring that together as a board, I think that will give us a lot of energy moving to take our next steps down this path, because we're literally listening to our community, all of our stakeholders. So that's an idea that we would like to put out for the board. We're definitely going to do it on the staff side, going to our own staff, but we really feel like that community piece is critical for the board to partner with us. So kind of open that up. Is that the direction? Are you comfortable with that as our next step in this community engagement piece and communication?
How is that different from the survey where we're going to do the focus?
The focus groups? You're not charging me $13,000 to do this. I'm using you to... it's us going out. And why I linked the ambassadorship.
So
I think it's important that you, as the board president and vice president and treasurer and everyone else, is out there looking at our community eye to eye and really talking to them. I think there's a value there that we won't get with a focus group. So, and I said it, you know, a little snarky, but the truth is, one, you're not going to have to pay for it, but two, we're able to collect that data and bring it back together. But there are some similarities to the focus groups. That idea is still there, and we would use some of the work that we, as we worked with Jill and others, some of that context we would bring forward.
Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, there's some commonality to when we did the visioning sessions in 2007, 2008, and started that whole process, which was the kickoff to, so what does a long-range plan look like? And the messaging around that, when we had those at the Boathouse, was you are SVP and you commit to three sessions. So it was a huge commitment on the community's part to say, I will come to all three, and they were 2.5 hours long, I want to say,
yeah, at least
7 to 9:30, 7 to 10. And it was a way to gauge also the community's commitment to come in and say, I have a stake in this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was great value in that. The other is... there were board members who attended, and so we were at tables doing kind of table talk around looking at the traditional kind of industrial view of how education is set up, and it was literally these maps of how education is and how it needs to change, and that was a very visual springboard for where our long-range plan was developed and where we are today. I mean, when there's comment that says do we know where we're going? Is there a plan, et cetera? Do we have a strategy? Absolutely. And I go back to that data and I pull it out and I say, this is where it began and it's evolved to this point. But the common conversation at the Boathouse those three times, is what set us. It rewrote our mission statement. We did a lot of heavy lifting as a community around that. I know there's been in the newspaper information about District 200's community conversations. Those conversations that they're having is what we did in 08 when we were visioning. That's what they're doing. It's Future 200 for them. And so, I feel like there's potential with this idea for us to be... coming back to the table to say, here's where we are with the plan. And we certainly, want to hear what people have to say about it. And if they're, you know, if we can't get them in a board meeting because these are business meetings and it's a different venue and, you know, it precludes, you know, that to some extent, then we have to, I think, find a way to do that outreach.
So if it worked, why don't we do it again?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where we are. And here's where I think it makes sense.
Why don't we just do Boathouse Part 2, Electric Blue?
I mean,
there's lots of different venues we could use, certainly.
I think what Paul's describing was a little bit less facilitated.
Yeah.
The Boathouse visioning process was very structured and organized, and I think that was one reason it was successful. It was hard to get people to actually come on three nights. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of, you know, having that commitment a little smaller for the community members. But you can set it up however you want. I mean, and as we discuss it further, if we do start looking at it and, you know, do we want to implement it, we can make it more facilitated, less facilitated. I think what Paul laid out was a very straightforward and simple approach that would be easy to do, quick to pull together, and would yield data. It's very much based on listening and being open-ended rather than facilitating through a process in order to get a certain type of information. So mm-hmm. go into it not really knowing what you'll get, to give some rough topics. So, but it doesn't have to be that way. It can be any way we choose.
So, Paul, did I hear you right? This is more geared towards the community, not the teaching staff, right?
The part the board would do, absolutely, would be more the community at large, parents, that 80% who don't have kids in our schools,
right.
That's who you would be reaching out to. I think for the staff, it would be
okay.
Myself and the cabinet.
So, okay, cool. That sounds like what I heard, but how do we get that? We keep using that 80-year-old grandma, but...
Who's 80%?
80%.
How do we get the 80%?
How do you get the grandma to come out to a meeting?
How do we do that? I mean, we could do it, and we have a very good idea of what we want to tell them, but it's a good idea, but if it's... the six of us in a room talking to each other again, it's not going to work.
Well, that's the beauty of RSVP. Yes, you do know who's showing up. Okay. But, a piece that Julie emailed you earlier, this is a really great document. So, but one of the things that says in here, that this is hard. That this is not something, you know, we're not the only district in the country who's struggling reaching out to the 80-year-old grandmother or the 80% who don't have students in our district. This is a hard problem. This is a hard nut to crack. I think the easy thing to do is say, you know what, they don't want to participate with us. We're just going to keep moving on. I think we just need to keep thinking about different ways of approaching this problem. Mm-hmm. This is one based off of what was successful in the past with some slight differences, but still reaching out, trying to get people to come and engage with us. Mm-hmm. It may not work. I'm not here guaranteeing we're going to get that grandmother to show up and talk to us.
What is the proposal to promote?
The proposal is...
how are we going to get them? What are we going to do? We're going to go email, we're going to go door by door, what are we going to do? That's because to get the 80%...
I'm not going door by door.
No.
It's a personal reach out. And, you know, the first listening session that District 200 held, there was, I think, approximately 400 people there. But they were talking about very specific things mm-hmm. like we did. I think... even though it was hard for people to commit to all three, I think we were all really pleasantly surprised by the fact that when people came, you know, I had a couple of people at my table say, I'm going to rearrange my calendar for next time because I want to come back. And so part of it is that initial gathering of getting them there. As difficult as last spring was, because many people came to our board meetings and it was around a lot of really tough issues for this board, it was invigorating to see that there are voices out there that, whether agree or disagree, you know, wanted to be heard. And I would, you know, as hard as that was, I would take that over, only hearing a portion of the voice or no voice or whatever that might be. So it's your first year call here, and it makes some sense that you want to outreach.
So we're
I just want to make sure, yeah. Are you comfortable with us putting you in that situation to say, hey, board members, come with me. And
well, see, I'll go one step further. Number one, Paul being you is a great point, because you going and outreaching is important. I mean, mm-hmm. You're here, you're the guy, and you getting down with the people is important. So I think everything's cool. Patrick said that.
You get my dancing moves are pretty.
So,
I do
think that's important. It's okay, Sam. I think it's important. So I think that's important. Yeah. But I'll go beyond that. And this is why I ask. I mean, as board members, I think we have a duty to reach out to people we know, and I think we ought to give ourselves some sort of 40 people we got to get out. Maybe it's not door-to-door for Sam, but Sam would use his cell phone and do it, but maybe it's door-to-door for me. We can choose our own mode. But I think, you know, I know it's volunteer, but if this is important, and you don't have to do it, obviously, because it's volunteer, but I think give us people to outreach to and have us pull people in, because it works. The more people you have at these roundtable discussions, the better the discussion's going to be.
You know,
it won't be dominated by.
That's not actually a bad idea. I mean, we all hate cold calls, and we all hate people calling.
I think the same is a good idea.
But what I'm thinking is, you know, if we have, you know, we're putting bonuses on ourselves, but maybe that's what we do. We get a Glen Ellen call directory, and we say we have a nice little script, and say, hey, D41 board member calling you, leaving a voicemail, give me a call if you have any. I mean,
there might be a.
Peter Ruskin calls me.
Yes, he does. Yeah, he calls me too. I thought I was special.
How many times do you answer him?
Yeah, but at least I live in your community. I'm leaving you a voicemail. If you're interested, you got issues, call me, send an email kind of thing.
So is it a goal to get people to come to these things who normally don't?
My goal would not be that. My goal would be to open to have other avenues of communication into us. They don't have to be here.
Something we talked about when we first met with the staff was that we have these board members, and maybe what we need to do to solve this before we get there is to have some talking points that we think the community should know about and start seeing if we can get ourselves invited to their meetings. And then, as part of that, try to get them to come to this meeting. Because when you ask people, do you want to go, would you like to come to D41 to talk about something, I'm guessing that if we look at that 80% again, they're going to go, what's D41? I don't even know what you're talking about. Oh, is that the district I'm in? I didn't know that's what the number was. And then they're going to be like, what do I care about what they're doing at the elementary school? I think we have to figure out a way to contextualize what our issues are that we think should be their issues, and go bring it to them first to educate them that there's some things going on here, and we'd really like your input, and see if you go attend, you know, so there's, and the thing comes back to the League of Women Voters.
Right. So I was going to say, based on comments that folks made throughout last spring, the project that the League took on in terms of assessing District 89 and District 41 facilities and the feedback on that. I mean, we, in some ways, have a springboard to say we're moving in a direction and the board agrees this is the right direction for this piece, right? At the same time, we know there's other voices out there. And I said this when it was over last spring. We really need to capitalize on those few phone calls we got that said, boy, I need to get more involved. Mm-hmm. So
we call those people again and say, you know, appreciate all the time. Would like to utilize you as an ambassador. Mm-hmm. You know, not an ambassador, but a champion.
It's really a bridge. I mean, this is exactly about building a bridge in terms of stewardship.
I think there's a lot of organizations that meet in one way or another in Glen Ellen who have an agenda. And somebody is in charge of putting things on that agenda. We should make ourselves open to them that if you'd like to get me on an agenda and talk for 15 minutes, I will come and talk at you.
Well, we certainly do that internally. And I think our, you know, the purpose in going to PTA meetings, you know, has been questioned in the past you know, at sometimes by the board.
You don't need
but it's incredibly valuable time spent. I don't care if it's 2 people or 10 people there. The point is, we made the effort. We're providing a face and a voice, and to you know any of the other you know organizations that we do, it's that model's in place.
And we got to be careful. As successful as this thing could be, if we really want to drive it forward, we got to be able to reciprocate. We can't say, come to D41 board meeting, speak, and you will not be spoken to. I mean,
well,
I don't know. If
that's the function of a business.
Right, right. I want to say we have to set up another forum,
where we can actually.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't be here. It would be a yeah.
So when you said invite them, I took that as invite them to this larger conversation, as opposed
right.
to inviting them to.
Right. If you send me an invitation, the point week. Is, if you right. send me an invitation, or even if you call me, I might be like, But if you come first to my meeting and explain to me in a 10 or 15 minute thing kind of what's going on, what some of our things are wrestling with, some of the bigger ideas, you don't talk to them about multi-age and about specialization because they don't know what you're talking about. You talk about some of, you know, this concept that there's a feeling in the business community that when kids come out of college, they're not ready. We'd really like to know what you think about that. We'd like to share with you some ideas that we're doing, but maybe you have some ideas about that. You know,
business
we have some facility issues.
I think that's huge. Business partnerships.
Yeah.
Or when I read in the paper that, I know this is off target a little bit, but when Steve Chen, who's a YouTube founder, a graduate of the Illinois Math and Science Academy, is giving $1 million to their STEM program, you know, where is public education in that conversation? You know, that's the kind of voice I think, I mean, ultimately, I'm thinking big picture, but you read those
it's
things
happening.
And you think, what if, you know, why about public education? And we have had the grads that have gone on to IMSA.
But there are public schools who are starting to get those donations.
Mm-hmm.
I know one very close and personal, Adams 12, is now working directly with Kerry Morgridge, whose husband was one of the co-creators of the Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's paying off, but it's a true partnership.
Right.
It is a true partnership, but it is becoming an incredible opportunity because she sees value, and it's not just taking and education.
Yeah,
they see partnerships as this. We've got to see it as there's going to be something in return too.
Yeah.
But I'd let other board members join in because what I've heard is some part of phone calling, some part reaching out to our established organizations
mm-hmm.
to bring people to the event that I had framed and Julie had framed.
It's got to be repetitive. Too.
Yeah. So you're saying this is an ongoing piece. This isn't just a one-time event
mm-hmm.
that occurs and then we never go back to it again.
It's got to be repetitive and frequent. I mean, here it is, spring. I'm calling these same 20 people or the different 20 people and say, just let me know, still here.
Mm-hmm.
Want to know this is happening. Our ambassador form, or whatever we're going to
yeah.
call it, is happening July 1st.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it. We got a new term for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not so sure. I've been to many meetings where there's been very small attendance, and the flip side of that is that I think people know more than we give credit for, and I think they're making a choice to not come. Because there's no reason for them to come to a meeting. They only come when they're affected, and they're affected in a negative way. I'm sure that staff and board members that have been there longer than any of us can tell us that this has been a problem for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you engage the community? And I'm sure there's been 10,000 ideas on how to do it. And here we are with, there's nobody here at our workshop, which is a huge impact on all these people, but nobody's here. No. So I'm not sure I want to commit my time, and we're all busy, we all have things to do, we all have lives, we have kids. I'm not sure I want to commit my time to something that I'm not sure there's going to be results to. I'm not saying no, but I'm saying I'm not sure at this point.
Here's one thing that's important, though. It goes back to, you know, we're doing what I think very good, great things here, and we got a lot of decisions in front of us, especially with the facilities. We have to reach out. We can't, 3 years from now, when whatever the referendum is out there, if we didn't do it, then they could say you didn't do it.
I'm not saying not reach out. I'm just questioning
the style of the reaching style. Out the engagement.
I
mean, if there's a better way, then let's figure that out. I mean, I'm all for that. The more efficiency is important in everything we do, especially given that, like you said, we got a lot of.
I mean, we have a system in place where the district calls everyone with kids in the district to give them messages. That could be the start. And if we get some kind of decent response to that, then we can maybe expand it. But cold calling people that don't care, I'm not sure that's any value to that.
Here's the thing. I think it's important to show leadership. And I think us stepping up and doing it at a critical time does change things. There's mistrust out there. You can sense it. I mean, this was written about how to overcome that and all that, and it's not easy, as Paul said. But at the bottom line is, we have to show ambassadorship, leadership. We have to show those skills. And we have to do it effectively and efficiently. I agree with that. But we have to do it. That I'm certain. And how we do it may be different for Drew and Erica than Patrick and I. I don't know. But we do need to go out there and try to engage. If we're successful, then that's it. The gravy's there. If we're not, then we got to try again. To your point, it's repetitive. And that's how I see it. I mean, we're on this board. I mean, we chose to be here. Leadership's is an important part of being on this board. So that's what my thing is.
I have to think that we've had, my time on the board, this has been an ongoing issue. Erica and John have been on the board even longer than me, but I remember that this is just an ongoing issue that we never seem to get traction. And there's lots of ideas. We've tried lots of different things. I like serving free beer. That'll get you a lot of it. I think we would have problems with the I'm open to trying different ideas. I really am. I'm just, I guess, after 5-6 years, I guess I'm a little bit more. I'm hesitant to jump on board and say I'm going to start making, robocalls.
Let's separate out decisions about what we would be doing. I think what's critical is that we have got to look at this with an optimist eye. And I go back, we all got this, and I saw this in the office, but this ASPJ came out, if you got this, and this article about this superintendent who started, tweeting. All this made me think about, not that we're talking about Twitter, but it's like what you said, Paul, there are so many fantastic things going on in this district. Every newsletter we get from the, e-news that we get from our schools, when you scroll through that, you think, my gosh, there's great stuff going on. And if we can find a way to capture that energy, out of those schools, and put it out there for the community, I really do think it's worth, attempting another, whatever it might be. And I'm with you guys. We can't, we have to be realistic, efficient. I do think it's part of our job, and I think I am so proud of what we do here. And I feel like it's like a light under the bushel sometimes. And we've got to, it's like that community member at the end of our conversation about land who said, you really do have a plan. There is a lot going on here. This epiphany for this person. And I thought, good for you. And good for us. Through all the difficulty of that conversation, if there was this reality check in this learning, and if that's what we can accomplish, great. And if it's one or two at a time, or 10 at a time, or 15, then, we'd start from there. But we've got so much great stuff going on, and so many big decisions to make post what we're doing now.
So, John, any thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about you.
You still there, John?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things. When we were interviewing superintendents, we heard that they had planned to be out. We had heard that they had planned to be out in the community, and that was their way of engaging with the community and being out there. So I think clearly we supported that, and it makes sense for that to be a part of it. And I think part of what we as a board felt previously is also that meant being in the buildings and not just being in CSO and you know, really understanding what's going on. So I think that's right. I think part of what we're talking about here as a board is kind of like what the village does with the, coffee with the cops, and provide another forum for people to come and talk and engage. And I think we need to do that, and I think we need to, you know, engage the community. I've always said the toughest part about being on a board is really not knowing what the community is thinking, you know, until either, you know, it's too late or the rumors are out there. So I think anything we can do to engage those people, and especially the other 80%, is a good thing to do. And given all the 21st century technologies and social media trends, you know, I think we need to look at those and see how we can, you know, engage in a way that, you know, to Laura's point, it was, we're not, you know, spending 4, 5, 6 hours a week out there doing it, but we're taking advantage of technology too, so that we can engage and discuss and have a dialogue and understand what's important.
So, in the spirit of making this a good meeting, I mean, I don't want us to keep brushing over, it's nice to have you guys been doing this for 10 years, that we got to reach out, I thought the purpose of this meeting is, what are we going to do to do it? Mm-hmm. Is that not what we're going to do here tonight?
That was my understanding.
I knew you brought in one option, mm-hmm. ambassadorship.
Does this plan that we put forward, is this what we want to continue vetting through, or do you have
other ideas?
And should we start here and see what we learn from the community? Or is this not the idea that you want? But I know this was an area of real concern for a number of board members who have brought this up on a consistent basis. But one of the things that I think is important and is shown in our facilities conversations, our PTAs generally have 3 to 4 people show up. 2 of the 3 had roughly 35 to 40 people. One of them today, but it was a cold, snowy, miserable morning, still had roughly 20-ish, would you say, people join. When we bring out a compelling topic, I believe community members want to engage with us. And I think what these last few days have helped me understand is there are greater voices out there in our community than the ones that are typically talking to us at the board. So it really opened my eyes and it allowed me to say there are different perspectives. And when we say there, I'm speaking from the community, that's not what I heard tonight. That's not what I heard at Lincoln. That's not what I heard at Forest Glen. That's not what I heard at Churchill. I heard passion for Phase 1 and Phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
I had parents are saying, why can't we start Phase 2 tomorrow? Well, I heard passion around kindergarten. And again, still a small sample size, but a greater sample size than what we're getting at our general board meetings. And I love the people who do attend the board meetings.
Yeah.
But I wish it was a greater population, a greater sample size. So I just think content and topic are important to be able to get people in to us, because we can't just say we're going to have coffee with the superintendent. Well, that's not very exciting. And I'll just tell you from my wife's standpoint, she wouldn't even sign up for that. So
if we can divide this up, I'm glad you're saying that, Paul, because I think there is structure and there is a greater leap of communication that the administration and staff has with the parents. I think we have that other 80% that we have to get around.
We do.
So do we think that's a priority to get in that 80%? And I think it's a priority because in 3 years, we're going to be going to them and say, we're going to need you to write a check, or we're not going to need them to write a check. But if we haven't laid down that groundwork, in parallel path through the existing work that you're doing now with the parents and continue forward, but that community member that has no idea that they live in 41. I don't have kids. I don't know. And I just write my... So how are we going to reach those, that 80%?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question. I mean, how are we going
to
do it?
Well, how you're going to do it is you're going to go to the last voter roster, and you're going to find those people who actually voted, and you're going to start there. So you're not going to go 80%. You're going to go 15-20%.
So that's the plan. Is that a plan that we want to go down?
I mean, if this is where we're going, then...
That's a solution to the...
Yeah, you can't just open the phone book. You have to target who you want.
Well, Julie's done this a lot of, lots of years, and certainly can give us some direction on this as well. But not deferring to you completely, but, I agree with Sam. I think that's a starting point, but I think it's incumbent upon us, and I want to support what Joe said. It was very eloquent in terms of, the leadership that we have to show. If we want engagement, then we have to model it. And I think we work really hard at that. I think president letters, all those things that we send out, this whole list that you sent us, this matrix on here of the things that we do. And in addition to that, some of the, some social media. I shared this with Julie. District 87 started on each of its high school websites, little Twitter feeds. They change every couple of days, but it's another eye catcher to see what's going on. And just a reminder, this goes back to all those things going on in the schools that happen behind doors that people don't open. So
can I say that the action items are ambassadorship, we need Julie to get us the last referendum. I'm not dictating, but I'm saying Julie, get us the last referendum voter cards or whatever it is. We're going to do something with that. We're going to ask somebody, board, Paul, staff, to start reaching out to community business groups, commerce, intergovernment people. We're on agenda. How do we get on an agenda? And we want to know the progress of getting on those agendas at monthly board meetings. Or at our board meetings. Yeah. Or those three things we would like to have as business topic discussions at every board meeting.
Not every board meeting, but if there's five of those board meetings out there, five different institutions.
No. I'm saying at every one of our board meetings, we get progress out of, I got all the updates. What do you want me to do with them? Okay. I reached out to these three people, and Dean, you're talking to them. Patrick, you're talking to these people. And the third one, ambassadorship, our first meeting is here.
Almost a communication or a community engagement bulletin.
I'm talking about an agenda item on our
meeting. Yeah, maybe unlike how we do the events calendar, where we kind of assign people to the events calendar, I think we ought to open it up and say, are you interested in doing it? Because if someone is really busy and they can't, then they can't. But if other people have more time and they want to nail some of these things, let us see what that is.
Okay.
So we can.
And I'll just use a quick example. I joined the League of Women Voters a couple of years ago out of interest, but I have to tell you that it's really been a great opportunity to do some sharing and do some level setting when there are questions around our district 89, 87, to be a subject matter expert, for lack of a better description. And it's a community ambassador piece. Mm-hmm. So we have some of that connection already by some of the board's people around, too. I think it's worthwhile.
I would hesitate to put it on every board agenda. It sounds to me more like a committee. And what I'm hearing is there are some interested members of the board who would be willing to serve on the committee. And maybe a quarterly report or maybe a monthly report would be better served.
Why wouldn't you want it on the board, Sam?
I'm not saying I don't want it on the board. I'm saying I don't want it on the board every meeting, because I'm not sure there's much to report on every meeting.
But if it's on the board every meeting, that entails us to make progress every 2 weeks on what we're doing.
Could be part of board updates.
If
we agreed that I'm going to sign up on these, and by the way, I'm not going to talk for 20 minutes. I'm going to say I went to this one, and this one. It's part of the board update.
And that's fine.
Board members, but I really think to fit it into our schedules, we got to start to get an understanding of where these organizations are, how to get to them, and then volunteer to sign up. And, my experience of this stuff is you don't have to be there for the whole meeting. Sometimes they just want you 15 minutes.
Yep. So is that the direction?
Do we have enough thumbs up that we want to go this way?
I think it's important to,
to be crafting some more around this to bring it to a board meeting and say, this is what we heard.
Mm-hmm.
This is what staff is capable of doing. This is what we heard the board's willing to, or at least portions of the board are willing to agree to.
Yeah.
So we bring that proposal back to you.
Another feeder to the outside community is at the PTA meetings. I know you're here at the PTA meeting and we're talking about school, but this is what we're trying to do with our non-parent community. If you are part of a forum, a board, a club, a whatever, tell us what those are, because we want to speak to that group as
yeah.
well.
Board outreach.
No, board outreach is important, and hearing multiple voices is important. And that's my main message. It's important to hear others on a consistent basis. And how do we do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have an opportunity for everybody. This was Sandy P. Hoss's letter. I did not know this, but she started these outreach programs. Maybe you have this too, Julie. But on March 12th from 7 to 9 at Hadley is an education outreach event. It's an advisory group, she calls them. And they're on cultural issues, age and senior issues, et cetera, et cetera. And one is education at our own school, Hadley. So,
did you discuss that today?
Discuss it.
Okay.
What is it?
I haven't
opened it yet.
Same thing.
Right,
yeah. So, you know, opportunities for us to touch base. And Sandy's very good. She always says, call my office, contact me, let me know what's going on, what are the issues. And so, it's in our backyard.
All right. So, I feel like we have staff direction on communication, community engagement, and facilities for our next steps. I'll hand it back over to you, Sam.
Okay. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined that it is a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and also collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more class of employees. May I have a motion to adjourn to close
motion.
The session? Motion by Mr.
Second.
Kenwood. Second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stark.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Buchensky?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. We're adjourning to closed session. We will not be taking action when we return to open session. Time is 10:35.
Motion.
Okay, back in open session. Time is 10:46. There being no further business, we have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion.
Motion by Drew, second by Kenwood.
Second motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried. Meeting adjourned. 10:46. Thanks, everybody.
John was opposed. Just for